WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now,
welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Hey, thank you very much. That's one of these things. You got to turn on the microphone. Hi, Jalene Jordan. Thank you for joining me as always.
Hello, and as usual, starting off on a great note. Yeah.
Well, you know, when you only do it once a week, it's not as easy as when you do it every day.
Is we also sit here and gab up until, and then we say, oh, here we go.
Yeah. But if you're just joining us, you're wondering, who are these amateurs? we do this regularly, believe it or not, and Night Call has been on the air for almost 40 years.
You know, are we going to have an anniversary party for you?
I'm
part of the last decade.
Yeah, you are. We got to get a lot of the people that were the hosts, and I hadn't thought about that.
Wouldn't that be cool to come in here?
But we are right here, right now. It's Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan, and it's a phone-in talk show, so I'd like to hear your opinions, because you're going to be hearing a lot of ours. 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
For the bashful, and when the lines are filled, call talkyes@yahoo.com. And is MySpace still happening? MySpace is kind of like just for bands now and stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. But we have a Facebook page. Just go to your Facebook and search Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan and come be our friend.
Yeah.
Basically, what you can get are the podcasts off of that. But feel free to leave comments. If we start getting enough, then maybe I'll get involved.
Sure. And thank you to Debbie Richards in Western Massachusetts, who puts it all together for us.
She's wonderful.
And I saw somebody on there I haven't heard from in a long time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I finally showed Peter what a Facebook page looks like.
Yeah, I didn't. Will I be number 200,000,001? That's how many people are on Facebook.
On it. It's amazing.
200 million. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I'll tell you what. After I get a cell phone.
Yeah, okay. When you quit borrowing your wife's.
Yeah. Somebody said to me, you're so cool. You don't have a cell phone. It's like, totally retro cool.
You're not trying to be cool.
I am. I just don't want one more thing to administer.
Yeah, it's true.
And, people say, I can't get a hold of you. I go, yeah. That's right.
If it's an emergency, they can find you.
Well, you know the old Pat Travers Band song, Boom, 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 Out Goes the Light?
Yeah, I do.
Out Goes the Light.
He was just here in town a couple months ago.
He was. And it was big on Saturday night, 8:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Actually, not Eastern Time. It was 8:30 to 9:30 all over the world.
And this was called the Earth Hour?
Yeah, the Earth Hour, where there was this coordinated event sponsored by the World Wildlife Fund to dim non-essential lights. I didn't understand that. I thought we were supposed to turn off all our lights.
Well, I like that you did.
I did. So I had good friends of ours over. So at 8:30, we kind of hustled all the dishes off the table and poured some more wine. And I made a fire in the fireplace, set up a bunch of candles, and sat there and yakked for it. And then it was 8:30.
We should be doing more of that anyway.
I mean, it was so nice anyway. Yeah, I mean, when the lights came back on, I gone, oh, man.
Yeah. This happened all over the world. I mean, starting in Sydney, as always, then the Eiffel Tower and, in all the big cities around the world.
The Great Pyramids of Egypt, the Empire State Building, the Strip in Las Vegas.
Right.
And let's see, Times Square. People watched as many of the massive billboards, including the majestic Phantom of the Opera marquee, darkened. Wow.
Yet there's still the haters in the world, Peter.
Yeah, well, you know who led that? A friend of mine and I were going to lunch, and so he's one of these guys, a terrific guy, but he's one of these kind of progressive liberals who likes to listen to these right-wing talk shows.
Yeah, just to see what they're saying?
So I got back in the car, and here's the head of the Republican Party.
Rush Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh. I didn't even know anything about it. That was the first I heard, telling everybody at 8:30 8:30 on Saturday, everybody should turn on every single light in their house.
Right. Of which, speaking of Facebook, this guy I went to high school with put pictures up of his Earth Hour party, and I'm thinking, what? You know, and I remember another friend of mine having a huge argument over Bush and everything. This guy's so right-wing. And his pictures were as every room, in every light in the house was on. It was so obnoxious.
Can you defriend him?
Yeah, I'm going to.
Yeah.
He's,
I mean,
out.
Is that a verb? Defriend?
Now it is.
Or did I make it up?
It's.
I'm not even on Facebook.
I've been calling it defriend because slowly but surely the Republicans are going.
Yeah. Here, the World Wildlife Foundation, or is it not Federation? What is it? Fund, actually.
Fund, right.
Managing Director Darren Collins, who helped Chicago officials organize the night, the Earth Hour at 8:30 on Saturday, said no matter what your individual beliefs are about climate change, energy efficiency is something everybody can understand in this economic environment.
Except for those.
Yeah, I mean, they are whack jobs.
Seriously.
I just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, there's something to breaking official consensuses. Like, you know, like Bush, where he mobilized the entire country around this huge lie that that Iraq represented a threat to us. So I think it was important that the grassroots attempted to break the consensus, and finally we did.
Yes.
I mean, it's unfortunate that so many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, including over 4,000 Americans, had to die. But I think we were successful, finally, in breaking that consensus. So why would the head of the Republican Party and your soon-to-be defriended Facebook friend want to break this consensus? There's something just, I don't know, mean-spirited. The idea of community that everybody feels that the Earth is in danger, the Earth is being harmed. And so why wouldn't they like that idea of turning off the lights for a while?
I just don't understand it.
You know, if the government said, in order to show that we're committed to efficiency, everyone is ordered to turn off their lights, I'd turn on all my lights.
Oh, because the government is telling you to.
Because I was ordered to.
I hear you.
This is a little different.
Right.
And nobody's going to die. You know, Bush lied, people died. I mean, that's pretty big.
And they're still dying.
Yeah. And those of us that want to break that consensus, and eventually did, and led to Bush's downfall, is extraordinarily important. The other thing, which reminded me, which I printed off these stories and left in the printer in the other room, but it doesn't really matter, is that it looks like there could be an international indictment of six officials of the Bush regime around torture, violation of the, even of the United States laws, but of Spanish law, because there were Spanish citizens who were tortured at Guantanamo.
Will it hold? I mean, you know, Bush exempted us from all of the international laws, right?
Except this is in Spain, and this is the judge who has put out a warrant against the Chilean ex-dictator Pinochet, mm-hmm. and who was arrested actually in London quite a few years ago and held. So, but what this means is that I don't have any of this in front of me. Is it John Yoo? Yes, yeah, John Yoo. This guy named Fife. All these people. All these smart guys that thought that they could violate the Constitution, the laws of the United States, the international law, maybe they're going to get pulled up short, which essentially means they're not going to be able to travel anywhere.
Are these cabinet members or senators?
They were in the
legal department?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So anybody have any experience with boom, 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 out goes the lights? Conspicuously absent from the list were the great monuments of Washington, D.C., says this U.S. News and World Report article, because it was all being done on a municipal level, and the lights of the National Cathedral, Judiciary Square, the National Geographic Society headquarters, and the embassies, and all of the monuments is controlled by the Department of the Interior. So, why didn't Obama...
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Get with it.
You get with it. Hey, you're going to be out and about. You're going to I have to leave town tomorrow, so I won't be here on Tuesday. But you're going to an event that I would like to go. This Walter Trout Show.
Yeah, it's going to be at Callahan's in Auburn Hills. Walter Trout, a blues guy.
Yeah, except I can't find this all of a sudden.
And I guess Is this the one about the? Is it the one about the new song?
It's yeah, it's a new song. They call us working class, but we ain't working anymore. Now, what? Oh, utility PC. Yeah, Pete. There you go. Now, I don't know this, but here, give a listen. And it's
they call us the working class.
Yeah, and
but we ain't working anymore.
And who else? Somebody else was just at Callahan's that I thought was very cool. Just
oh, there's been a bunch of good.
But good. Good folks. And it's
oh,
where?
Yeah.
What city?
Auburn Hills.
Auburn Hills.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right out by...
The Palace.
Yeah. Right out by the Palace. Yeah. Let's see if this will start it. If not, I'll start it by hand. Okay. Now, but here it is. This is Walter Trout, and this is the kind of thing that I could... well, actually, it could make Jolene and me lose our jobs because I figured just play this guy. But here, this is Walter Trout. They call us working class, but we ain't working anymore. Come on out and see Jolene Jordan at Callahan's in Auburn Hills,
yeah.
Tuesday, 7 to 10.
I'll be there 7 to 10, and Walter's on, and there's another band, a local band, opening up.
Yeah, I mean, we ought to be playing this one on WRIF.
It's good stuff.
Doug Podell, are you listening? Of course you are.
Or Mark Pennington, the
Mark
program
Pennington.
Director. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Hey, let's suggest that to him.
Okay.
Okay, you do it tomorrow. I got to leave town.
Okay, I'll do it.
All right, so, and that song, again, if you want to, you know, it always bothers me a little that words sometimes are difficult to understand. I thought those were fairly clear.
Yeah.
But it's Walter Trout, Like the Fish. They call us working class, but we ain't working anymore. And this is off a YouTube video. So you can just go to YouTube.com and type in Walter Trout, T-R-O-U-T.
Yeah, and I knew I was doing the show, but I didn't know how cool this guy was.
I had never heard of it. Thanks to Chris in Grosse Pointe, by the way.
Thanks, Chris. See you at the show.
Wow. There are people that just want to talk and talk, but there's a couple of things. What did I... Oh, yeah, just one thing. You know, this might be too long. Well, do a little bit of it. Fish caught near wastewater treatment plants serving five major U.S. cities had residues of pharmaceuticals in them, including medicines used to treat high cholesterol, allergies, high blood pressure, bipolar disorder, and depression, according to researchers.
You know what else? Sexual dysfunction.
I mean, like Viagra and stuff?
They're finding Viagra in there. And now I've been wondering why I've...
Why aren't people drinking...
My cholesterol's down, Peter. My blood pressure is solid. My allergies are gone. I'm not depressed, but I cannot get rid of this erection.
Let's see.
It just won't go away.
All right, let's
now
see.
Now I know why.
Roger. Roger, who's answering our phones, hi, Roger, writes, he's in another room. Great place to see a band is Callahan's, where Julian Jordan will be hosting Walter Trout on Tuesday, 7 to 10. She's going to be out there. Of course, the show will go out longer than that. And, oh, yeah, it's official Detroit Blues Society Bar. It's on South Street. All right. So let's see. They also found traces of a concentration of 7 drugs and 2 soap scent chemicals in fish and all 5 of it. The amounts varied, but some of the fish had combinations of many of the compounds in their liver.
So you're going to keep drinking tap water?
Yeah, why not? Sounds good to me.
I don't know.
Vice President Biden's daughter caught up in cocaine scandal.
Yeah, what is the whole story on that?
I don't know, but it's not. I don't think it's a scandal. And this is from.
She was just doing a little toot toot. And
people still do that. I don't know.
People that's so, still do it, Peter.
That is so 80s.
You know, and Hillary Clinton talking out against drugs and the reason that Mexico's in the crapper drug wise and all of the murders is because of us. Not us, but I mean Americans who choose to do, recreational drugs. And I mean the pot thing. It just so what? You know what I mean?
I just
The blow thing. You know, I mean a little bit's okay, but it can ruin your life.
Sure. We just had a breakfast with friends of ours, and I'm sure we never eat alone. We drink alone, but we never eat alone. the woman is a specialist. She's like this PhD in nursing. And, her specialty is drug abuse.
Oh, really?
And she said for cocaine, crack, and heroin that the addiction rate is about 15%. So the abuse rate is about 15%. In other words, of 100% of people that try it, about 15% of the people abuse it. So 85% of people don't.
Just doing it on a Friday night.
So here, this says... This is really kind of explosive language. RadarOnline.com. You can read this for yourself. An explosive video being shopped to media outlets has plunged the White House and Vice President Joe Biden into a cocaine scandal. RadarOnline.com has learned exclusively. The video shows a woman who is represented by the seller who is trying to sell this video and his attorneys to be Biden's daughter Ashley snorting several lines of cocaine. And it said it looks identical to her. In addition to Radar Online, representatives from the New York Post, a large British newspaper, and the National Enquirer have all viewed the tape. The woman on the tape clearly resembles Ashley Biden, 27, who is a social worker employed with the Delaware Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Was shot last year. On the tape, a man cuts up 5 lines of what is said to be cocaine. The woman, who the seller says is Ashley, then jokes with the man that the lines aren't big enough.
Oh, geez.
The man hands her a rolled-up dollar bill, and she proceeds to walk a few steps to a table where the cocaine is cut. She pulls her hair back, bends down, and snorts a line. 4 lines of blah, 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 blah. She snorts the first line. She snorts the second. The tape was made without her knowledge. It's being shopped around for $250,000. The events on the tape are represented as taking place at a party in Wilmington, Delaware, and the woman said to be Ashley is with a boyfriend. The cocaine is done amid a party scene with loud music playing and several people talking at the same time. Now, I guess news clips show that Ashley Biden was once arrested for marijuana possession while she was a college student in New Orleans, and that she was arrested in 2002 on a misdemeanor charge of obstructing a police officer outside a Chicago bar. I know women like that.
She's a wildcat.
But you know what? First off, where's the harm here? Where's the harm to society? I mean, we know what breaking and entering, rape, murder, theft, all this stuff. We can very easily point to where the victim. Where's the victim here? I don't understand.
Seriously, I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of people out there agreeing.
Yeah, and people say marijuana is something, but cocaine. I mean, ain't no business except hers.
I mean, I, like I said, I think it's, for people who want to do it once in a while here and there, and it's not affecting their health too much. I mean, the stuff ain't too healthy.
Well, no, I mean, even if they do, and that could become, I mean, at some level, medical things that create medical problems does take on the aspect of a community problem, a community health problem, and it should be dealt with like that. People overeat. People eat really bad food for themselves and develop heart ailments and, the emphysema from smoking and lung cancer, and those are real concerns to the community. 80. So we have stop smoking campaigns. People are doing research on how to stop lung cancer, stuff like that. But, I mean, to get the cops involved in this, what that means is essentially, well, here's one headline. Cocaine trade helps rebels reignite war in Peru. And it's a whole thing about how the Sendero Luminoso, the Shining Path rebels, are have been resuscitated as narcotraficantes.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
The trafficking. It corrupts governments. It corrupts police forces. It corrupts armies in those countries. And can anyone really tell me that the level of social harm that is done by the ingestion of these intoxicants is worse than all the crime, social dislocation, and money? I mean, of course, I mean, there's big money on all ends of it. There's big money, certainly, in selling it. That's why these drug cartels are having these huge battles that, you know, that Americans want it. And we're also selling them tens of thousands of guns so they can have these huge fights. But is this really worth it? I mean, the war on drugs is actually a major scam that makes criminals of our neighbors and people that want to alter their consciousness. I know that people shouldn't drive. I mean, you shouldn't drive when you're drunk. I mean, that's good.
Oh, not
yeah, and you shouldn't drive when you've been doing cocaine. You shouldn't drive when you've been doing heroin or marijuana or anything like that. But it's my body, and ain't nobody's business if I do.
But a lot of people like to make it people's business.
Yeah, do this, though. Don't call me up and say, oh, yeah, I agree with you, man. We ought to make the reef legal.
Right.
But if anybody can give me a compelling reason why drugs should be illegal, let me know. You know, because I can't. I'm not trying to say that they're harmless. Listen, I drink. I have at least a glass of wine or a beer or something like that. Sometimes a mixed drink every single day, almost in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that. On the other hand, all of us have known people that have suffered greatly from alcoholism, including members of my family. I know people that have died because of alcohol addiction. Mm-hmm. I also know people that have died because of drug addiction. So it's not. They're not harmless substances. They're not. I don't know. Well, I mean, from overeating.
But it's not up to the government to tell you.
Yeah. Well, we ought to deal with it. We ought to create people that have a sense of propriety, of moderation, so that just like, you know, that I know that, I've had about 3 or 4 beers, so just like in that sappy Eric Clapton song, what is it, You're Wonderful Tonight?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I give my wife the keys.
Right, right. Yes, because she doesn't drink.
Yeah. Actually, I probably hurt somebody's feelings really bad. Wonderful Tonight. That's our favorite song.
I like that song.
Oh, God.
But I'm a girl.
Yeah, you are. It's a girly song.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Some guys like it, too.
I love it.
Clinton, this is the Secretary of State we're talking about, says U.S. feeds Mexican drug trade. Well, do you think? We want the drugs, and we want to sell them guns. Yeah. All right, usually we talk considerably into this half hour, but there's so many of you. Let's get curious, and there people are all over
the subject matter,
all over the place. Subject matter.
Great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Mix it up.
All right, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And now you don't have to be bashful, or you'll get a busy tone if you call. So if you want to email us, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And short little paragraphs are good. I mean, we can't edit long manifestos right now. Here's Jeff from Southgate. Jeff, hi, it's Peter and Jolene on WRIF. Thank you for joining us. You're on the air.
Hey, man.
Hello.
What's up, man?
What's up, man?
Who's this, man?
This is Peter and Julene. You're on the air. Don't cuss.
Man, I've been in the air before on a plane, man.
Really?
Really, man.
Where's Chong?
Dude, where's Chong?
Man.
Put the bong down.
Put the bong down and get Chong on the air.
I haven't did nothing since 9 o'clock, man.
Well, good. That's what I was talking about, moderation.
Yeah.
Wow, man, it's like you're right there, man.
All right, Cheech.
Thank you, Cheech.
Have a great night.
It. Yeah, we can tell. Let's see. Here's, where are we here? Blah, 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 blah. Well, I want to bankers. I hate them. All right, here's JP. JP is from Clarkson, wants to talk about bankers with a grip on society. JP, you're on the air. They got a grip on our throat.
Yeah, that's right. That's right they do. And you know, more importantly, they got a grip on our pocketbooks, and we don't even know it.
Well, I think we know it. But
do we?
If you know it, I know it.
Well,
what do you think?
That every dollar is made and given to the U.S. With debt attached to it.
Now what? What happens? Is it, what's attached to it?
The debt.
Oh, the debt. Yeah, we're running up the debt. That's for sure.
Big time.
To the federal, what's that called?
Reserve?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I don't know. You know, I was actually listening to these right-wing conservatives on the way here that were talking about how deeply that the Obama administration is digging us into debt with these enormous bailouts of these financial institutions and industries that were, you know, rather than being the smartest guys on the block, the sharpest knives in the drawer, were, you know, just these people that couldn't run a simple business without running it into the ground. And first off, I thought, where were these conservatives when George Bush was doing this, when he began to take an economy that had a surplus and began running up an enormous debt by invading a country that we didn't have to and cutting taxes for his rich buddies and corporations. And suddenly these conservatives are crying that we're going to have a debt for the next generation and maybe even the generation after, even though Obama said...
Well, we already knew that with Bush.
Yeah. Well, Obama says that actually the debt's going to be cut into. I don't know whether it will or not. But in any event, here's what I don't understand. And I actually have some of those concerns myself. But I don't know what is the conservative answer. I mean, if you could, you know, the free market, which there isn't anyway, you could let them all go down. So these awful people in this AIG, the perception almost everywhere was if they weren't bailed out, they could drag the entire economy down with them. And what, you know, I'm not sure that really means anything to people in any direct way. I mean, we kind of do. But you could be looking at 25% and 30% unemployment. You at worst case scenario, that the entire society would stop functioning, that there would be no ability to exchange goods and services, and we'd all be on our own. So, sorry, I haven't really let you get it, JP. I haven't let you get a word in edgewise. I kind of share the skeptics. Some are on the left, many of them are on the right. The ones on the right are just because, you know, they want to get back in political power. They couldn't care less about the economy or anything else or debt. But what do we do if we don't bail out these crooks and thieves? That's the problem.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I really want to know is, who are these people at the Federal Reserve? I mean, the Federal Reserve is about as federal as FedEx.
Well, it's not true. I mean, it's a semi-governmental agency. I mean, it's a, you know, the people that see the root of it all as the Federal Reserve, I mean, I think it's pretty short-sighted. I mean, sure, let's make the Federal Reserve a government agency. I mean, somebody's got to regulate currency and monetary policy and what have you, or things would go to hell faster than they are now. I mean, and sometimes they've made the mistakes, like forgetting his name, but I mean, he was the guy that said, oh, everything is fine, and everybody said he was a genius. I don't know why he's on the tip of my tongue, but and you know, was all about not regulating things and what have
not
you.
Greenspan,
yeah. Who was the head of the Federal Reserve. I mean, the Federal Reserve was set up to stop stuff like this from happening. And, of course, just a few years after it was set up, we had the Great Depression. So it's obvious that it didn't work well. But in cycles are inherent in the nature of capitalism. They happen in the 17th century when capitalism was just being established. They had in Holland. They had something that was like a tulip bulb. I forget there's a word for it, but it was a bubble. I don't think that's what they call it. It was like a tulip bulb bubble. So it's in the nature of the system. It's the people at the top always manipulating finances for their benefit. And once in a while, in the times of the boom, the ordinary people share in it some, and they're certainly not critical of the system, or they're not critical of the rich people, then everything goes to hell, and then they go, oh, those damn rich people, you know, they're crooks, and they screwed everything up, and what have you. Well, if Obama gets this back on track, and someone's got to suggest some alternate if they don't like what he's doing, if it gets back on track and nothing has changed, well, it's just a matter of time before the next crash comes. You know, so we'll have 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years of prosperity, and then the next little wrinkle will hit us, and boom, 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 out go the lights. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here's Jack in Riverview. Jack, hi. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You are on the air, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah. How's it going tonight?
Going good.
I was wondering what you think of this conservative call to arms by some of these Republican representatives that actually are telling people they want to get them to get their guns and get ready to fight this supposedly socialist Obama administration.
These, fascists are, besides representing particular economic and social and political ideologies, are also whack jobs. I mean, when you go back and look at the Mussolinis and the Hitlers and the Francos and the people, even more so the people that followed them, they were pretty, I don't know what you'd call them, pretty distorted personalities. So, they said the same thing about Roosevelt. Roosevelt came into office, and there was already grassroots revolution starting to occur everywhere from, you know, southern farmers and in the south and in the west. The unions were calling general strikes, and things were getting more and more radical. And Roosevelt essentially was successfully out to save capitalism. I mean, he's not a socialist, and neither is Barack Obama. I don't know what to say to these people except that they're nuts. I mean, I don't know. That's not much of an argument, but sometimes. I mean, I've known crazy people. I mean, people that are legitimately crazy, and they tell me all sorts of crazy things. And usually, what I do, I'm very. I don't tell them they're wrong. I just look at them very sympathetically, and I go, okay, you are getting messages from the Plutonian space fleet. All right. That's your reality. But it doesn't correspond with what most people conceive of reality. So I don't remember these conservatives all got in this frenzy when this other moderate Democrat got in, Bill Clinton.
Right.
Who it turned out to be, in many ways, a conservative's good friend. Signing bills like the Telecommunications Act, NAFTA.
Oh, yeah.
What else is he known for? Repealing that...
welfare.
All that welfare stuff. Repealing that bill that gave the banks the go-ahead to get involved in mortgages and all that. So I guess Obama is to the left of that, but it calls for it. I don't know what else... Like I say, if somebody said, you look at... this massive amount of money that's this infusion into the system is creating this enormous debt. And I'd go, yeah, okay, that doesn't sound good. What's the option here? And I don't know what they come up with. Do you?
No. They call to violence based on an ideological view, which is bankrupt.
Yeah, well...
Their ideological view is more bankrupt than they can even foresee the country being.
I know. They are, and they have no sense of self-reflection. I mean, when you think about how unpopular they are, and the people that now we revile so much, rightly so, the bankers, the financiers, the regulators who didn't regulate and what have you, I mean, this is squarely the results of Reaganomics, the so-called free market, which was really just freedom for these thieves to loot the common people. And it's like I said earlier, we got a little piece of the action for a good number of years, at least some of us did. I wouldn't say that everybody did, but a lot of people did, so it was kind of cool. I mean, the 401ks were growing. The value of our houses were going up. We had these bigger pensions. And, so what? And so Bush is torturing a few people and starting a war where working class kids are getting killed and, killing a bunch of people in another country. Yeah, who cares? Suddenly, we're all up in arms. We all want to take our, all us peasants want to take our pitchforks and go, and torches. Don't forget the torches, because this stuff's best done at night. And go to the village square and start demanding the heads of the lords. Well, maybe we should have done that during the Bush administration. Maybe we should have done that during the Clinton administration when the Republican Congress passed the NAFTA bill and Clinton signed it. So we may be too late. I don't know. Barack Obama may be too late. We always talk about Bush being Hoover. I just hope to Gaia that it's not, that Obama doesn't turn out to be Hoover. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate that call. But that reminded me of something. I don't know if this is here. Here. Cities deal with shanty towns. Talk about...
This is horrible.
Have you seen any of that on television?
I have, a few images.
The operations manager of an outreach center for the homeless here, Paul Stack,
Fresno, California,
is used to seeing people down in their luck. What he'd never seen before is people living in tents and lean-tos on the railroad lot across from the center. Just popped up 18 months ago, he says. Pardon me. One day it was empty. The next day there were people living there. And then the New York Times article says, like a dozen or so other cities across the nation, Fresno is dealing with an unhappy deja vu, the arrival of modern-day Hoovervilles, illegal encampments of homeless people that are reminiscent on a far smaller scale of Depression-era shantytowns. Why do they call these Hoovervilles now? They ought to be calling them Bushvilles.
Yeah, they really should be.
Yeah, yeah. I was just trying to, here, there's a very, very interesting movie. It's called Wild Boys of the Road. And it's this, I think it was made like in 1932, 1933. Jolene's fingers are flying right to the,
Oh, do you want me to look?
Oh, I thought you were, yeah.
Oh.
Directed by William Wellman. And it's about these kids that leave home because they don't want to be a burden on their parents who've lost their jobs. And they
What's it called? Wild Boys?
Of the Road. Yeah.
Okay.
And they go to these, hobo encampments, and there's this huge fight with the cops at one point when the police try to move,
1933,
yeah. Is it William Wellman? Is that who directed it?
It was, yes.
Yeah. So you can get that Netflix or something like that, but it's a little corny, back from that era.
It says, at the bottom of the Depression, Tom's mother has been out of work for months when Ed's father loses his job. And let's see. Oh, yeah, so he doesn't want to burden his parents. Is that what you said?
Right.
Yeah. What is that? Oh, he hops the freights and looks for work. Oh, yeah, that's great. Sewer City and Midwest, and they go to New York.
Yeah,
all right.
Finally. Yeah, I know. It's an interesting film, to be sure. Also, without help, Postal Service faces threat of going broke. What about that? The Postmaster General, John E. Potter, told Congress on Wednesday, "We are facing losses of historic proportion. Our situation is critical." Last week, the Post Office said it planned to offer early retirement of 150,000 workers, get them so we'd have less people working at the post office. Anybody been to the Ferndale, Michigan post office?
I don't.
Or been to Detroit post office?
I've never had a really good experience at the Ferndale post office.
We call it the post office from hell.
What is the problem?
They don't have enough people. The postmaster
is
there said, please complain.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
And so hopefully you have.
Yeah. I never heard back from him. Well, where's our money going, though? This is the old connect the dots here on Night Call. The Pentagon's new Africa Command is still recovering from early missteps in explaining its missions and purpose, miscues that government investigators say have left lingering fears at the State Department, at the State Department, in Congress, and on the continent that the Defense Department is militarizing the nation's foreign policy in Africa. Blah, 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 blah. So, the point being, why do we have an Africa Command? Why do we have a military presence in Africa? We are the only country in the world that does that. And does this bring anything to us? Well, it brings something to the military-industrial complex, which is this black hole sucking down, you know, tens of billions of dollars of our taxes that could have been used for all of this, and we might not have run up the debt. But that's sort of it. We have a choice eventually between having a Pentagon Africa command or a functioning post office or a continuation of shanty towns. Your choice, dear friends. I'm Peter Werby with Jillian Jordan. This is Night Call, 313-298-WRIF. And let's see, here is Sam. Sam is in Macomb Township. Hey, you're on the air. Sam, are you... Don't tell me this is one of these things where I got to click the button. Sorry, Sam, you're on the air now. Go ahead.
How you doing, Peter?
We're doing good.
I wanted to talk about how the last guy we called about the grip on the economy by the banks and everything.
Yeah.
Well, I think I need to do the duty and tell the people, whoever listens to the radio station, to go out and educate themselves. They need to go out and they need to watch the movie Zeitgeist.
Yeah.
I've called you before about it. You guys kind of cut me off, but you
need to
educate.
Why do we hear that all the time?
You need to, I promise you, this movie will change the way you think about the economy and about our government.
Yeah, we've both seen it.
We've seen it. It doesn't change. Actually, it's not like I had great faith in the Federal Reserve and this government and the capitalist system before this, and then this went, oh, my God, these people are manipulating. What do you think would occur? Did I ask you the same thing, Sam, last time you called? What do you think would occur that if either we, A, abolish the Federal Reserve, or B, made it a federal, a completely federal institution answerable to congressional oversight, which it is has now anyway.
Well, honestly, Peter, I think we need to get rid of the federal income tax. It's illegal. It's immoral in the first place. I think the state tax is fine because, you know, you should pay for the things that around you that you live in, the area you live. You should pay for the roads and the poles that light the roads and all that other stuff.
What about the post office?
The post office?
Yeah, it's federal. There's a few other things too that are federal. We might want to shift some money towards.
Well, I'm and I know there is, but they're gouging us completely. I paid $15,000 in taxes this year, and I only got $500 back from federal, and I didn't owe a dime to federal.
Well, you know, if you lived in Sweden or Norway or Finland or some of those other countries up there, Denmark, you'd get an enormous amount of goods and services back, including a health program that was 100% taking care of your needs. What we get here is a Pentagon Africa command. It's not so much that our taxes are among the lowest in the world of industrialized country. The problem is that we pay taxes, and most of it is frittered away on BS. That's not about the percentage of taxes. I mean, it's about where it all goes.
Yeah.
I mean, are you okay with Ron Paul?
Yeah, I wanted Ron Paul to be president, man.
Okay, well, Ron Paul says that we got to get rid of these Africa commands. We got to take the troops home from these 700 countries where our troops are all. We can save hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars, more than would cover even these bailouts, whether they made any sense or not. I don't want to argue about that, whether it does. And yet, and it wouldn't go down this enormous rat hole of this war budget.
Yeah.
You know, you keep telling me, I'll tell you what, since we have both seen Zeitgeist, I would recommend to you a video, which may not be online, but it's called Why We Fight. Why We Fight.
Yeah.
Okay, give that a whirl.
Check it out.
Check it out. Okay, thank you. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here is Jimmy in Bridgewater. Jimmy, welcome to the broadcast. Good. You're on the air.
Why We Fight. Excellent.
Yeah.
Video. Excellent.
Yeah. Wait, is it available online or you got to buy the...
You can get Netflix.
I can't answer that.
Okay.
I just came
Netflix
back from the Campaign from Liberty Regional Summit in St. Louis, Missouri. And there is a bill, H.R. 1207, called the Federal Reserve Transparency Act, that Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich are trying to push through Congress. And what it will do is it will require the Government Accountability Office to perform a complete audit of the Federal Reserve by the end of 2010, reveal the details of agreements that the Fed has made with foreign central banks and governments, and show which banks and Wall Street firms have received the money that we're giving them.
That's terrific.
They ask him all the time. They ask Ben Bernanke all the time. He just says, no, I'm not telling you anything.
Yeah.
And the number that you can call if you want the plug is 202-224-3121. Call them people in Congress and tell them to support this bill. We have to do this.
This is the point where we can do this. Anything, I mean, people have lost such confidence in the financial institutions of this country, and well, they should have, that this is the time that we can start bringing into being things that make sense for us rather than that little elite at the top that run everything.
Have you ever read the book The Creature from Jekyll Island?
Now, why does that sound familiar, though?
It was written by a guy by the name of G. Edward Griffin. He's from Livonia, Michigan. Actually, he lives in Arizona now. But it's a very good book. If you don't have a copy, I would happily send you a copy. I send one to every congressman, the governor, all of my my county.
Send it over. You know, do you use the internet, Jimmy?
Yes, I do.
Have you ever been to my website?
Yes, I get your emails.
Okay, if you go down to the bottom, if you go to the right-hand column, it says Contact Peter, and it gives what we call snail mail. Or I can just tell you, you know, it's just Peter WRIF 1 Radio Plaza, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220.
Yeah, I'd be happy to send you that book, because what you know about the Federal Reserve is totally wrong. It is a private, run-for-profit bank.
No, I know that.
Our country is not fascist, it's not communist, it's corporatistic. Our government works for a private, run-for-profit bank. That's who we work for.
Well, I don't know. You know, what we want, rather, I mean, I was starting to object partly to what you were saying, but, you know, it gets to be a little too arcane. I mean, what people want is to be able to work, produce goods and services, get a fair wage, and be secure, to know that they're immersed in an economic system that's not going to continually pull the rug out from under them. People that, entrepreneurs, small businessmen, or even large businessmen, want to know that they have a stable workforce, that they are willing to pay a fair wage, give decent benefits and pensions, and everything has gotten completely out of control. Send it off to me, Jimmy. In fact, listen up, because I just want to talk a little more about that. Thank you for your call. Now, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Tesla Motors, named after the marvelous
rock band?
Rock band named Tesla, yeah. The history of, get me Tesla's first name. It's like, Enrico or something like that. People are going, you idiot, Werby, it's blah, blah, Tesla. Just don't. Tesla, right, Tesla?
Oh.
Yeah. I'll probably think of it. But anyways, Tesla's history and the genius of his imagination in creating, the late 19th century and early 20th century is amazing, the things that he came up with. In fact, there's an interesting movie, too, that escapes me. Everything's escaping me. I got a head full of ideas that are
driving.
Nikola Tesla.
Serbian.
Yeah. Serbian?
Well, it says that was Serbian. Oh, they're showing it in Serbian Cyrillic.
Oh, wow. That's weird.
That is weird.
Must have been Italian, eh?
You would think.
Yeah.
Well, that could have been.
Put Tesla and put movie after that and see what you get, the movie I'm trying to think of.
Okay.
Anyway, they have a Tesla Motors, forgetting about all the rest. And he got screwed so badly by Thomas Edison, who was an evil right-winger, actually.
Charged. The story of Nikola Tesla.
No, I don't think that's it.
Nikola.
Whatever. Anyway, Tesla Motors on Thursday unveiled its Model S, an all-electric sedan it hails as the beginning of a generation of fossil fuel-free cars and a profitable company. Sounds good, doesn't it? But here's the winger. But before that happens, the company must find the money to build the vehicle. Tesla is pinning its hopes on Washington and a $450 million government loan. They'd borrow it, and then they'd get it paid back. Department expects to hear from the Energy Department this year. The Model S is Tesla's second car. The first is the $109,000 Roadster sports car. An elite group of 300 own the car on the waiting list for this. It has 1,000 names on it. Yeah. And the Model S, which Tesla says, this is the company, not the inventor, says that it would be the first mass-manufactured all-electric car. Would cost $57,400 or $50,000 after tax credits.
Yikes!
One of the spokesmen, I don't care, Mr. Musk, said that when gas savings are taken into account, buying a Model S will be comparable to buying a $35,000 Ford sedan. Pointing to the sporty silver prototype, he said, "Would you rather have this car or a Ford Taurus?" Well, they must be having some pretty expensive hubcaps on this Taurus to make it up to $35,000. You can get them for under $20,000.
Yeah,
I got one for under $20,000.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they're not bad. Sorry.
What are we hearing?
It's my phone. I don't know what it's doing. I'm not texting. Okay, is the movie Tesla the Accumulator?
She's either belching.
I'm not. No,
or yawning.
It was like a nervous habit pressing these buttons. Was Orson Welles in the movie?
No, this was just recently. Maybe some.
Tesla was born in Serbia.
Was he?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. What did he say? Oh yeah, yeah. I know what that made me think of. Here, talk.
Next subject. I have no idea where we're going. 313-298-9743 if you want to call in and talk about any of the subjects that we brought up tonight, or you can always bring up a new one.
Yeah.
We have no problem with that.
Well, just bringing this up, because you were mentioning you hit your cell phone there, and I'm always, I can't see your hands, I'm always accusing you of texting, right?
I'm not texting.
Okay. So there's something new, it's called sexting. You know about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, where you send pictures, nude pictures?
Nude or semi-nude photos.
I have never sexted.
Neither have I.
No.
Yeah. I don't even have a cell phone.
Right. That would be
tough.
Who
would I send it to? Don't you get arrested for stuff like that? Apparently, these young women in Pennsylvania, northeastern Pennsylvania, ran into this. There's this prosecutor. I mean, there must be no crime there, or you know, they wouldn't be bothering with this. But he considered these photos of these two young girls, Marissa and
a
friend.
Is that what they call it now? Considering. Yeah. Right.
What?
Did you say he considered them?
Oh, yes. Both were wearing bras. And the mother, when she saw the film, said they were a couple of goofballs. Now, the George P. Skoumanik, who's the district attorney of Wyoming County, said he considers the photo provocative enough to tell Marissa and the friend, Grace Kelly, interesting name, that if they did not attend a 10-hour class dealing with pornography and sexual violence, he was considering filing a charge of sexual abuse of a minor against both girls, that they were both perpetrators and victims.
Oh, my gosh.
You bet this guy's a Republican.
But yeah, and maybe a little bit evangelical.
Yeah. It was the same deal that 17 other students, 13 girls and 4 boys, accepted by the end of February. All of them either been caught with a cell phone containing pictures of nude or semi-nude students, or were identified in one or more such photos. I mean, this is something for the parents.
Agreed.
Right? I mean, I don't think parents want their 15-year-olds sending around nude photographs of themselves.
But heck no.
What about adults, though? I wonder, you know.
Well, that happens all the time. All the time, you know. And for some reason, guys always want to say, let me show you this one. I don't get it.
Really?
Yeah.
People have showed you?
Yes. But we're in radio, you know. I mean, yeah. These
you
guys.
You got any on your phone?
No, absolutely not. I'm not that dumb. Hey, Richard wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Wanted to know if you're going to the Hash Bash, maybe.
Oh, I forgot all about it.
Next Saturday. And he said a lot of us, Ron Paul, and I'm talking about him, types, will be there protesting the Federal Reserve.
Go. Oh. Okay. You know, this is the second year in a row that I have forgotten about the Hash Bash in Ann Arbor on the Diag in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where thousands of people come to protest marijuana prohibition. And there's a great song that I play called Hash Bash.
Yeah. It used to be real big. Real big.
It's not, I don't think, yeah. I think
it's not as big, but yeah. They still gather.
Where's our friend Adam when we need him? Adam, are you listening?
I don't know.
Yeah, give us a call if you are.
He's in charge.
So, yeah. So it's next Saturday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 12 noon.
So Richard says.
Yeah, 12 noon on the University of Michigan Dyke. Listen, I tell people this all the time. In Ann Arbor, I think it's like a $25 or $30 fine if you're caught for possession of marijuana. On the University of Michigan campus, it is a state, at least high misdemeanor. High misdemeanor. punishable like by a year in jail and a $1,000 fine if you get caught there. And they always have undercover narcs and what have you. So do not smoke any reef at the at the hash
bars. Don't do it.
Let's take a break. Hey, if you're on the line, we're going to get to all your calls. Dave and Matt and Kyle and Jacob and Neil and Joe.
We'll be right back.
Next. Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan on WRIF, 313-298-WRIF. Oh, thank you. You know what? Roger knows everything.
He's amazing.
Maybe he's more...
maybe he has the power of Google.
Yeah. It was called The Prestige, and David Bowie played Tesla.
Oh!
It's a very good film.
I can't believe I've... something involving David Bowie that I haven't seen?
Yeah, and in the movie... I knew that. No Google, he writes. that Edison destroys his lab. Finally, Tesla wound up working for Edison, and he promised him like $20,000, which is an enormous amount of money back
then. Sure.
And Edison never paid him a dime.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
He was pals. He being Edison was pals with Henry Ford when, you know. Henry Ford sending, in the early 1920s, sending money to the Nazis.
I know. And Hitler had a picture of Henry Ford in his
bunker. Berlin. All right. Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Hello.
How are you?
It's Mike. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday morning with America's toughest sheriff, Joe Arpaio from Maricopa County, Arizona. Also Monday, we'll interview an actual savant, totally Rain Man, all the way. It should be very interesting. And we'll follow up on a news story involving a nude man who walked into a Tennessee Stop and Go, act like nothing was going on, just bought some beer, ended up caught, thrown in jail. We've got his number. We'll see what we can do with that. And we'll give you details to get you qualified to win tickets to the Final Four. All right. We'll see you Monday morning with Mike in the Morning on 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Yeah, all right. I'll see you guys there.
Mike in the Morning on 101 WRIF.
Attention business owners. Each week, over 30,000 consumers receive the Motor City Steals and Deals e-updates looking for places to shop and save right here in southeastern Michigan. Wouldn't you like them to be your customers? Harness the power of RIF's on-air, online, and email marketing to drive consumers looking to spend money to your local business. The best part for your business, no cash outlay. Want more details? Call Bruce Eichner today at 248-591-6821. That's 248-591-6821. And find out how to put Motor City Steals and Deals to work for you.
Money, money, money. How's your money today compared to this time last year? I'll bet your IRA, 401k, and brokerage accounts are down big. 30, 40, even 50%. And some people think it's going to get worse. You can't retire yet, but you can find a broker to help you. The Secure Investors Group. They'll get you into fixed, secure investments that are guaranteed to grow regardless of the economy. Right now, the Secure Investors Group is offering a free analysis and consultation on your current portfolio. Just call 248-335-6200. Don't wait for the market to come back. Be proactive and guarantee your portfolio growth in 2009. Secure Investors Group has strategies to stop the bleeding right away. Call 248-335-6200. If you're down 50% like many folks, your account needs to gain 100% to be even. Will that happen with your current asset management? Fix it now by calling Secure Investors Group, 248-335-6200. That's 248-335-6200.
Clearly, HD Radio evolved from the katydid. The male katydid must adjust his mating call to attract a wife. The HD Radio receiver, much like the Randy katydid attracting his entomological mistress, emits dozens of free digital radio stations, all different and new, in order to attract that most fickle of mates. The male radio listener.
Buy an HD radio right now and get great deals at the Apple Store, Walmart, and Best Buy. It's time to upgrade.
101.1 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and joined, of course, by Jalene Jordan.
Yes.
And at... doesn't look like I have this up. At
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, a couple of interesting interviews, which I will work on. Can you go to that? Go to Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.
I benefit.
No, peterwerbe.com. A lot of good stuff on there, by the way. And none of my art, none of my writings or anything
you
like
that. You do a lot of copy-pasting, information, yeah. Right? Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And then at 1:30, if this is the order you're doing it in.
Who knows?
Okay. Well, coming up, Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive.
Magazine,
tells about the centenary. Centenary.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh,
I hope it's his centenary, the 100th anniversary.
Centenary of his magazine.
Yeah, which is incredible. Everybody who's anybody in the progressive end of things over the last 100 years have written from the magazine. They're having a big party.
Party, and Robert Redford's going to be there.
Exactly, yeah. All right, let's get back to our phone, 313-298-WRIF. Joe's in Windsor. Joe, thanks for making our show international. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues.
Go ahead.
But, I'm just wondering, it seems like since Bush got into power, it seems like there's just pure fascism. Like, there's nothing you could say or do, or it's like... total fascism, there's not even a democracy anymore, it seems.
The
neocons took over years.
But aren't we saying what we want to say?
Yeah, but thank God. I don't know how, I'm surprised with their web they didn't take you guys out of the air. It's amazing.
They must not think that we're we're not a danger. We don't represent any threat.
Right. I think if there was enough movement or enough people behind it, I think there would have been a change. But I think, too, that, from outside seeing in, I think that if you guys would have, just rallied and get them out of power, it would have been, that's how I'm perceiving it. But
Tried.
Well, we tried. Remember,
we're only two people.
On February 15, 2003, millions, maybe even tens of millions of people around the world said no to Bush's lies about Iraq. And he just ignored it. And the media all fell in place here in the United States. People tried. I think people just got kind of burned out after a while. Because the democratic process is so the loyal opposition in that case was the Democrat. Isn't that funny? The Democrats are this loyal opposition, and yet when the Republicans get when they're on the losing side, they do everything they can to try to destroy and disrupt the people that are running things at the time.
It becomes bipartisan. It's like it's no longer a team. It's
Well, all right, Joe, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Thank you for calling from the city to our south, Windsor. People from around the country are thinking, the south, isn't it? Canada to the north? No, yeah, go look at your map. People are expressing a lot of anger. Let's see here. Where is it? Oh, yeah. An anti-capitalist group calling itself Bank Bosses Are Criminal has claimed responsibility for an attack on the home of Sir Fred Goodwin, former chief executive of the Royal Bank of Scotland. He was called Fred the Shred for his eagerness to cut jobs and costs. And they call him Sir Fred. And that's him. I know other people think Fred, but Sir Fred is kind of weird. The organization warned of further action against other targets minutes after police were called to Sir Fred's house in Edinburgh. Officers were alerted by an alarm, which was set off when three downstairs windows were smashed in this really swell place that the guy has. And his family home is in the Grange, an affluent suburb, and a large number of his fellow residents will have lost money in the financial crash. Mm. Yesterday, many told the Times that they were upset by the greed of the man nicknamed Fred the Shred. One woman in her 70s who gave her name as Deirdre said, Deirdre said, people should not go around breaking windows, but I can understand why if they have lost their job.
Yeah.
It's not right, but I can understand why they would do it. Let's see. Also, AIG, protesters outside the AIG office aren't the only ones upset about bonuses. The insurance giant has also been receiving harassing emails. Now, this is not good, people. Do not do this. Someone identified only as Jacob the Killer hauntingly writes in an email, get the bonuses, we'll get your children.
Well, I know. Can you believe this? People are getting downright dirty. Mad.
Yeah. Your blood will run in the streets, so said another. And, well, I thought I had another one here. Oh, yeah. Yeah, here. In, where is this? Somebody else. That was Fred, the Fred guy. Last week, nationwide strike drew at least 1.2 million people, and the government remains worried. Guadeloupe, a French overseas territory, there were outbreaks of violence in Greece in December. This week it emerged that that Thierry Morin, the departing chief of the French car parts supplier, Valeo, was being given a golden parachute of $4.4 million, even though the company had received state aid and was preparing to cut 1,600 jobs. Let's see, Francois Rochelin from Institut Montaigne said, people here are fed up with the fact that those being deported are those who caused the crisis. Away from the elite in Paris, there's a sense of injustice. It's not a but it's growing.
The world.
Yeah, so they've been, but, you know, everybody's what they call hedge fund managers. And how many of you know what a hedge fund is? What is the problem?
Aren't they kind of a bookie?
Yeah, it's part of the big casino. Oh, you know what? I didn't make the point about the, the most important thing about the Tesla car, but they
that
the Tesla Motors has this new all-electric sedan that it said could end fossil fuel cars, and they want to borrow $500 million from the government in order to make it happen. So that sounds like that's pretty good, but isn't there something called a stock market? You know, the stock market used to be to capitalize enterprises. So what would happen would be is that Tesla would go out and find investors that are willing to put up $500 million. But all of this money now is in speculation. It's all in this fake wealth, this, you know, that just isn't even really there and then evaporates when all of a sudden someone says, look, the emperor has no clothes. So, what, I mean, they ought to just make the stock market so that the average person can understand, and there's not exotic financial instruments that no one can understand. I mean, they talk about these derivatives and these, what's some of the other stuff? I can't remember. But, they've taken what was having to do with entrepreneurial capital and turned it completely into this enormous casino. So, I don't know. Relieve all debt. That'd be good.
Our debt.
All debt.
The people's debt.
The people's debt, yeah.
You know, Peter, on the car...
Abolish the stock market.
On the car note, I'm making great strides. You know, I've been driving this gas guzzler for a while and not feeling good about it.
Yeah.
And within the month, I'm going to get a car that gets 40 miles per gallon.
What are you getting?
I'm not... I don't really want to announce it.
Okay. That's okay.
You know, because, you know, everyone's going to then go, you need one of these, and you need one of these. But I'm getting a car that gets 40 miles per gallon, and I can't wait because I'm going to feel a whole lot better about everything and saving money.
That's good. Well,
I may be getting a hybrid.
All right.
Yeah.
Much earlier in the show, we were talking about drugs, and one of the things I said that the laws against drugs had created so much harm to people. It was, in other words, the government was taking on the role is that drugs were harmful for us and that we ought to, that we need to be protected from ourselves in such a manner that there's, there's a Meats Inspection Act. We don't just allow that to the open market. Meat has to be inspected. I know there's problems with it. There's the...
I would go for more inspection.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things. What the hell is that monitors drugs, new drug.
The FDA?
Yeah, the FDA that monitors new drugs coming on the market and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So the government argues essentially that it has to protect us from ourselves, or at least that there's a portion of us that if we use drugs that they'll cause great harm to us, and so they have to have all these laws. I say that we've wasted probably $1 trillion, except that it's turned into this racket. It creates... customers for the prison industrial complex, that it, you know, that a great amount of money for police enforcement and these, why can't I think of anything anymore? Am I going down the drain?
I don't think you are.
What are the DEA, right? The drug enforcement.
Oh, the DEA, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we could get
like
rid of all
the alcohol, tobacco, ATF?
Yeah.
What about them?
They just deal with alcohol, tobacco, firearm.
Okay. We're not going to go there?
These conservatives say that that ought to be the name of a supermarket.
Oh, really? And they should have all those things there?
Yeah.
Well, I'll take the alcohol.
They're sweet. Here's Kyle in Oxford. Kyle, you think that drug could be illegal?
Yeah, I wanted to go back earlier to say that somebody could give you a good, compelling reason why drugs should be illegal.
Yeah.
I don't know. Quite simply, I think it just devolves us as a human species. I mean, have you ever seen a crackhead up close before?
Sure. You ever seen an alcoholic up close?
Yeah, them too.
Well, do you think we ought to have a prohibition against liquor? I mean, there's certainly millions and millions of alcohol addicts that are doing damage to themselves, damage to the community, damage to their families. And we tried prohibition there. Didn't work too well. Got the same result, actually. Criminals, enormous costs, and people didn't stop drinking.
Right, right. I think there's, like, you know, different severities of each situation. For instance, when I talk about drugs, I talk about, like, a lot of the man-made stuff, you know, like, you know, crack, cocaine, ecstasy, you know, that kind of stuff.
All those chemically things.
Yeah, so what responsibility does the government have for me to make sure that I don't use crack, cocaine, or cocaine, or heroin, or ecstasy?
Well, definitely enforce the laws.
Now, why should there be a law against it? Why can't I take care of myself? I don't need the government to make these determinations. What they should probably do is attempt to educate me on the dangers of it. They should have community treatment centers. I have no problem with telling people that prior to ecstasy being made illegal, I probably took it four or five times. And
this was a long time ago.
Yeah, this was the 80s before they made it illegal. And I don't know that anyone who has
never done it.
I don't know of anybody that's been harmed by ecstasy.
Well, I mean, there's like the few kids who have died because it was bad.
Now you got bikers in Kansas that are, you know, making meth and this adulterated ecstasy.
Well,
I would never touch that stuff. And I'll tell you, it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that it's against the law, but I have no confidence in the product.
Right.
But what compelling interest does the government have in protecting me from crack?
Well, one thing about the government I'd like to add is, I think they like to take advantage of that situation a lot, money-wise, it's just, sometimes I think they're going into it for the wrong reasons, and sometimes you don't even know who the bad guy is, you know?
Well, you seem to be making my argument, but why shouldn't I make the decision about whether I use cocaine or heroin or PCP or, you know, I mean, in other words, if I know that certain drugs really have destructive capacity, that it ought to make me very, very wary. But people know that. I mean, is there a heroin addict on the planet that doesn't know that that there is a possibility of getting hooked? Most don't. I mean, according to the figures quoted me earlier, 85% of people who use cocaine, that use crack, that stuff like that, do not become addicted. So they're using it recreationally. And, Joe Biden's daughter was at a party and doing cocaine.
Who cares?
Who cares? I mean, you care, maybe you laugh about the Bush girls that were these party animals just because...
They were mild.
Yeah, well, but they were, you know, the Bushes and all those conservatives are so self-righteous. Someone tells you that, that a liberal was partying and, you know, drinking or doing drugs. Yeah, so what? You know, I hope they haven't done anything to the extent that they harm themselves or others, but
right.
you make the assumption that they don't, because, you know, tens of millions of people use alcohol. Millions of people use illegal substances.
Yeah, I was up at the Pistons earlier today.
Yeah.
The little Pistons gathering. And, man, the alcohol that was flying around that place, unbelievable.
All right, Kyle, you haven't convinced me, but thank you.
I would be more afraid leaving, you know, driving home from one of those games than I would be leaving many parties.
Well, we all know how horrible drunk, driving is and just the horrors that it's created. But every time we talk about this, I say that on a Saturday night, they estimate that there are 20 to 25 million people driving in the United States above the legal limit.
Yeah, kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Well, so,
you know, all those people can drink as much as they want as long as they have someone driving them home.
Well, most people don't.
I know.
I mean, I sometimes wonder. I mean, if I feel it at all, I won't drive. But
and you know I don't at all.
Right. Looked at those cold iron bars.
Those cold iron bars in 1999, the worst, well, pretty close to the worst 6 hours of my life.
But
and they didn't even give me a Bible, even though I didn't want it. I was bored.
But, you know, you can easily go over the line.
Very easily. And, you know, I'm not necessarily, a big gal or anything. But I, two drinks and I'm over the limit.
Well, I was thinking.
It's one per hour, but I don't know.
I have two drinks and I don't think, I don't think I feel it at all. But it could. What if it just sort of reduced the synapse ability to alert me that something was coming?
To react.
Yeah. So I'm maybe one of those 25 million that are without even realizing.
Maybe. Yeah. I think there are a lot of people don't realize,
All right.
how much it takes and how little it takes.
I appreciate, Kyle, you calling in. I don't think you did a good job of...
convincing you?
Convincing me, or I don't think anyone, actually. All right, let's go to Jacob in Waterford. Thanks for waiting so patiently, Jacob. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I was just wondering if you've heard the song Shutting Down Detroit by John Rich.
You know what? Didn't someone...
Is this that country artist?
Yeah, he's from Big and Rich.
Big and Rich, yeah, I know who... Is he the kind of... Wait, no. I always get them mixed up. Is he kind of... Is he the normal-looking one?
I wouldn't know what he looks like.
Isn't there one who's like a little more funky, wild?
Country.
All right. Is it a new song?
No, I got it right here. Let's see.
Really?
Who's doing it? What did you say?
Rich.
And who was the other person?
Big and Rich.
Oh, Big.
Is the duo that he...
Okay.
Very successful country duo.
All right. Did you want to say anything about it, or do you want me just to play it?
Well, I was just going to say that I like how the lyrics say, living it up on Wall Street in that New York City town, while here in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down.
Wow.
God.
Well, let's do this. I'll play it. Thanks for reminding me about it. But let's see. Bree, who sent it to me, said, hey, Peter and Jolene, came across this video on YouTube, thought I'd pass it along. Yeah, I know it's country, but hey.
Yeah, don't play too much of it.
All right.
We don't want people to freak out.
Yeah, all right. We'll see.
We could make comments during it or something.
Okay. Here it goes. This is at YouTube as well.
Oh, he was born in Detroit?
Yeah, Shutting Detroit Down.
I was born in Detroit, and this is my tribute.
Yeah.
That's the video. I'm watching from over here.
Okay. So I...
And...
All right, so something's going wrong.
You got her turned up here? Hot on?
Yeah, I do. Let me see. That's the... Well, that's where we heard the other song, but I don't know. Well, let's see. Huh.
I don't know.
Let's see.
I don't know. There's a problem.
Same program.
There's a problem.
Okay,
Houston.
We will work with it. Yeah, we will work with it. Don't worry. Let's see. Here is Matt. Matt's in Dearborn Heights. Matt, thanks for calling 313-298-WRI.
Hello?
You are on the air, Matt.
Hey, what's going on, man?
What's up, Matt?
Hey, listen, you're talking about Big and Rich. Big and Rich is their dual deal. They're partners and get the
your country duo, yeah.
Yeah. Well, John Rich went on his own and made the song Shutting Detroit Down.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right.
But we can't. Hey. We got it up here and we got their video, but I can't seem to make it. I can't seem to make it play. I don't know why.
Well, you know, I just like to say that, you know, you're talking about Simon Tesler making an electric car that gets, 40 miles to a gallon?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay, Simon Tesla is the inventor of the Tesla coil.
Right. You know, the Tesla coil. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, well, the Tesla coil, you know, NASA, for years, have been taking space shuttles and sending them in outer space. You could take a Tesla coil and with a degausser and look on the bottom of it. If you run enough power through it, you're going to break the law of gravity and you're going to elevate the... You can elevate a spaceship. You can elevate a house. You can elevate anybody.
You're just saying, yeah, I have a friend of mine, Stephen in Ann Arbor, who's all deep into Tesla and ball lightning and stuff like that.
This is breaking the magnetic pole of the Earth.
Yeah.
You're reversing. Actually, it's like taking two magnets and pushing them together, and you take the reverse side of them, and it pushes it up, pulls apart.
So what does this all tell
us? You guys are losing me.
Yeah.
The what?
Yeah. And actually, NASA's got these space shuttles, and they're spending millions of dollars. I think the other day I heard $10 or $20 billion they're going to want to spend on the space shuttle to go up into the space, they're building
I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm not a fan. Thank you for pointing that out, because we talk about that from time to time on this.
All right. Appreciate it. Let's see. Here from Mount
God,
Clemens.
That's a lot of money.
Here's Melvin. Melvin, hi. You're on the air.
Hey.
Hey, Melvin.
Hey, you don't mean Melvin, Melvin. You mean Marvin.
Marvin.
Do you know how long it's been?
This is Marvin Marvin. And, he's not stuttering, folks. This is his name, Marvin Marvin.
Yeah, I love the show, and I love talking about the Hash Bash. So
go ahead. Yeah, you were kind of like a sponsor, weren't you?
Well, some people think I'm the founder, but that's just a rumor I spread. Adam is currently, I believe, in Los Angeles, and of course he'll be there to be the MC. But at 11 o'clock, there's going to be a march protest in front of the federal building in Ann Arbor, and that's to protest the fact that there's still, even though President Obama said there weren't going to be any more raids on the growers in California, the distribution centers, there still was one last week. So
really?
So maybe he just doesn't know about it.
All right, let's remind people. We're talking about the Hash Bash, which is an annual event on what's called the Diag in the middle of the University of Michigan campus in Ann Arbor. And it happens, the first Saturday in April.
You met Peter. Remember last year? They someone else booked it.
Oh, yeah.
And they had to go elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. There's always some hassle.
But those guys there let them come up and talk anyway.
Yeah, there's always some hassle about it.
Is that going on this year?
You got it this year?
We have it for the Adam calls it, the hour of power from 12 to 1.
Okay. Does someone else have it around there?
I'm sorry?
Does someone else have it booked after that?
I don't know, but what
is I was going to say, have a good time. Your event will be a little more colorful.
after that hour, people should get there by 12 to hear me do the H. Give me an H. Give me an E. Give me an M. Give me a P. What's that spell? Hemp hooray!
Okay.
Hemp hooray. Marvin, let me ask you a question. We were talking. No one's really responded to this. There's this new phenomena called sexting, where you send nude photos of yourself to other people. Have you done? He would do stuff like this. Have you done that?
I'm an old man. I don't think too many people want to see my hot pod.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm not saying anything.
So this is a kid phenomenon, I guess, huh?
I just want to complete this hash bash. After the 12 to 1, we go to the Monroe. We march over to Monroe Street, where they have the street closed off, and there's going to be bands and speakers, and it's right by the law school in front of a bar called Dominic's. And people will be there for the rest of the afternoon until about, and early evening until about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night with bands and speakers. And
is there a website for this?
Hashbash.org, I guess. I checked it the other day. I can't remember. That far.
We'll find it. Well, Marvin, sometimes known by our screener as Melvin. Thanks for joining us, man. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Peter. week.
All right. Bye-bye. Now. You know, I was thinking about names. I saw a guy whose name was, I mean, who? What kind of parent would do this? The guy's name was Robert Bob. His last name was B-O-B. So his name is Bob Bob.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You don't want that.
Well, it looks like there is hashbash.com.
Yeah.
And there is a MySpace. M-I hash bash. But I don't know if it doesn't, this hashbash.com doesn't look right.
All right. And I was just, well, there is one open line. I was just to say for the first time tonight, 313-298-WRIF. Here's Dave in Hazel Park. Hi, Dave. You're on the air with Peter and Jolene.
Hi, Peter. I've had a couple arguments with, debates with friends.
With
what
friends?
What kind of friends?
Just friends in general.
Okay.
You know, a lot of them, they ask me why I don't shop at Walmart, and it's kind of hard to put up a protest or any kind of debate at all because I don't have any valid reasons. I mean, aside from a couple of years back, you know, 30,000 illegal immigrants were, like, discovered working at Walmart.
Yeah.
You know, they got fined for it. I remember hearing about that on the news, but I was wondering if maybe you can give me a little more info so that way I could put up a better debate.
Well, there's actually, and Jolene's fingers are flying. Again, there's actually websites that are put together by groups that object to the hiring process, the conditions at work, the fact how anti-union they are, how they just distort the economies of foreign countries where they get their goods from, and how when they go into a community, they virtually run out of business all of the local merchants.
Hey, there's let's see, Walmart-blows.com. Kid you not. And it looks like there's a Yahoo group, a Walmart. Oh, there's walmartsucks.org.
There's got to be.
Try that one. Walmartwatch.com.
I would try walmartwatch.com.
I like the other names better, but you're probably going to get better information on walmartwatch.com.
Now, I'll tell you, Dave, there's an interesting phenomenon going on, and I didn't look too deeply into it, but they make so many billions of dollars, and they're not very generous with their employees. When anybody's unionized, they've just closed the outlet.
That's the key right there. It was Canada and somewhere in the South, right?
Right.
Where, if anyone tries to even attempt to unionize, they just close the whole store.
Yeah. But what they've done is they've, we talked about that last week, and I don't know.
$9 billion.
They redistributed like $9 billion to their employees. So, if they are smart, they haven't been very smart about their PR because they're so wealthy. It's the kind of thing, they could give away $9 billion and they would still, the owners would still have billions and billions and billions. So a lot of people will say, look, I mean, their sales have been going up. People say, look, I got to buy the cheapest stuff. The times are tough. I don't have a job or I'm worried about my job. I don't know. I mean, it's often the people that that shop at Walmart do so because they're lower down on the economic scale. And if you're not there, it's kind of easy to say, you know, sniff, you know, I would never shop at Walmart.
Right, it's true.
On the other hand, I don't know. I've never even been in a Walmart, so I don't know. But Costco, one drawback is you have to belong to it. Costco has a lot of the same prices, and they welcome unionized employees. They have good benefits, and on. So if that's the long and the short of it, I guess.
Well, my girlfriend, she worked at Walmart in Maine, and she told me that they actually opposed unions, and that they said that, you know, if anybody comes up to you asking you to join a union, you know, just shoot them down and say no. And I don't know. Like,
it sounds like that.
I was tuning in last week when you were talking about how they were demanding prices from, like, Chinese suppliers and demanding the prices that way they can make them lower here, but yet, I don't know. Like, I want to be able to support America in every little decision I make. Like, you know, I would prefer to go to somebody in line at a store as opposed to a youth can, or, you know, I would like to buy an American car. I wish there could be something to where we could ban foreign cars being sold that aren't made by Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of which, you should buy an American car. Yeah, I heard you talking about buying buying a new car with 40 miles per gallon. I hope it's American. You know.
Oh yeah, of course.
I'm a laid off auto worker. So.
Really? Well, friends of mine, have bought mainly Hondas, and my wife said, "Well, we're going to look at a Honda." I said, "We're going to go look at a Ford." All right. Well, thank you very much, and I hope maybe my car will tip it and you'll get back to work, Dave. Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's see here. Here's Neil. I want to start about the post office. He's calling from Ann Arbor. Neil, it's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I just heard a couple things that, people were bitching about the post office, and it's kind of like they were worried about the money being spent, and it's been since, 1983, I think, that we used any actual public money.
No, that's right.
Money.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, we've been running. I work for the post office as a letter carrier, and we've been pretty much doing our thing the whole time on the sales of stamps and services, package delivery and letter delivery, obviously. And I think sometimes people forget about what it takes. I mean, we are the lowest in the world for delivering a letter. And, I think New Zealand used to beat us for years. Okay, but look at the size of New Zealand and look at the United States.
Well, Neil, actually, I think the only person that was that said anything critical was, maybe me and Jolene, who said that the Ferndale Post Office is the post office from hell, and as are many of the ones inside the city of Detroit. And I did say, though, the postmaster said to me, I said, this is crazy that I come here and there's 12 or 13 people in line, there's one window open, and I have to take 40 minutes out of my day. And she said, I know, it's terrible. These people are wonderful, by the way. The individuals, they're polite, they're efficient, but they don't have the resources other than one window. You go to Royal Oak, you go to Birmingham, you go to Troy, those post offices, and gee, amazing, those are just fine, right? Probably Ann Arbor as well.
Look at Royal Oak, and of course they're going to have more help there.
Sure. Because
that's what happened back in the 80s. We all know what happened back then.
Oh, yeah. Well, they don't want to mess with anybody there. That's where the term postal was invented. I forgot about that. But the point being that one of the things that a government ought to do is, in fact, ensure a postal system that's, that's speedy and efficient. And in the main, it is.
It is.
But when they start talking about taking out 150,000 people out of the system, and I'm pretty surprised that that the Obama administration would go for that. I know it's independent board and all that, but you got to remember, I mean, these federal unions and their members are huge supporters of the Democratic Party.
Well, and that's why it takes so much for anything to actually occur, because you have the Postal Commission. At any time the gas goes up by one penny
at
the pump, that costs us $8 million.
Okay.
So you have to look at what happened over the last 2 years when we were up around $4 and that whole thing. That was a lot of money. Now, we can't raise prices like everybody else to accommodate for that. We just have to, keep doing our thing, running in the red. That's what occurs. Now, prices have fallen again. We're getting back to where it was. But I think what people forget, too, is the fact that we are a government agency. Well, we're in limbo. We're technically... postal carriers and people over at the post office actually technically are not government employees in the sense that we don't have the same pensions as now. We have 401ks just like everybody else. We don't have, since that postal reorganization in 78 and went into effect in 83, we're all doing pretty much the same thing. I lost my whole retirement.
Damn.
Last year.
Damn.
Wow.
Well, listen, I got to move on, Neil, but I think most people appreciate the postal carriers.
Yes, thank you.
Windows, and a big thank you to you. We're going to go to, I was going to go to spots, but Joan from Ann Arbor has been waiting for half an hour, so let's get her on the air before we do spots. Joan, thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I just wanted to comment, excuse me, what you were talking about, you know, drugs being illegal or legal, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I took some classes. I studied abnormal psychology, and I know for a fact that abuse of drugs can cause mental illness, and, you know, it causes, it alters your brain chemistry. So if you're doing it too much or abusing it, it can, you know, cause you to become, sick.
Like absolutely.
Or whatever. Well,
yeah, I mean, we know that cigarettes smoked a lot cause lung cancer. And we know that alcohol drink, if you drink it a lot, it does your liver in and does actually can have brain damage as well. So we know that most intoxicants have a very dark side of it, but why are they illegal, though? I don't understand that. And particularly when we know that making them illegal corrupts police forces, corrupts governments, creates enormous violence, and it is huge costs, and people still do them, right?
Well, I agree with you on some of that. I just wanted to say, though, that, you know, sometimes when people, like, smoke pot and then they go to work or something and they're operating machinery.
That's bad.
Well, they could get hurt, or when we've got pilots maybe flying under the influence of...
Wait, we all know that that's bad, and we also know that, I mean, that's why people have random drug tests. I know people, members of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, that they have random drug tests.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's okay for people. I usually say that employers have the right to a drug-free workforce. I'm sorry, let me put another. A drug-free workplace, but not necessarily a drug-free workforce. And what we do when we're off the job is none of our employer's business. But it is if in certain industries where public safety is at risk. You don't want cops and firemen smoking reefer before they go out on a call. That's for sure. But the same thing is true that with alcohol, you know, and other things that we don't police, like I said, like overeating, eating the wrong foods, all of this stuff that can have a bad effect on you. I mean, and this has been a total failure. There's millions and tens of millions of people that use illegal drugs, and plus legal drugs. They use them, you know, like I get. Someone told me that the big drug is Vicodin. You know, Vicodins can sell for $5 and $6 a pill. Yeah, I got bottles of them.
Really?
Yeah, when I actually had that hernia surgery about a year and a half ago, I never used those. And So, call me after the show, anybody.
Peter, take that back.
I take it back, for sure. All right, Joan, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back. Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Centerfold Lounge is giving you what you want. The hottest, women's, sexiest dances, rock and roll, and the best drink specials in town. Mondays, enjoy $15 buckets. Tuesday, ice cold Miller products are only $4. And on Wednesdays, get in the spirit with half-off pitchers. Celebrate happy hour Monday through Friday from 2 to 6 with $4.50 drinks. Saturdays, half-off everything until 8 p.m. Couples are always welcome and pay no cover. Open 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. Monday through Saturday and 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. on Sunday. John R., 1 block south of 8 Mile Road.
Centerfold! Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, the host of the radio show Hire at Dawn. Now that it's spring, it's time to fix up your home. Whether it's a new roof, siding, windows, paint, concrete drive, gutters, deck, landscaping, or any other project you've been itching to get done, we can help make it happen. So tune in this weekend to Hire It Done, or go to hireitdone.com and let my pre-screened contractors compete for your business. Don't put that project off any longer. Visit hireitdone.com today. Get your project started by Metro Detroit's most professional contractors.
Finally, an all-natural male enhancement product that really works and works fast. You can be sure that when the moment is right for that most intimate experience, you'll be ready to perform in the bedroom. Hero Tabs has been scientifically developed as a natural proprietary blend of the highest quality ingredients that is safe and effective. Just take Hero Tabs 30 minutes before sexual activity, and you will experience explosive, fast-acting results with just one dose. Hero Tabs works the first time and every time, guaranteed. Hero Tabs will give you the ultimate sexual performance. In fact, we are so sure that you will rise to the occasion that we want you to try a free sample to test it for yourself. With over 3 million doses sold, we know once you try Hero Tabs, you will become one of our satisfied customers.
Test the power of doctor-recommended Hero Tabs absolutely free. Call 1-800-256-1210. That's 1-800-256-1210. Call right now so you don't miss out on your free sample. Call 1-800-256-1210. 1-800-256-1210.
Now, a message from one of the co-founders of ADAM, the American Divorce Association for Men.
In 1988, my law partner and I established ADAM, the American Divorce Association for Men, right here in Michigan. At the time, we saw how often men were treated poorly by the court system. We decided to dedicate our entire legal careers to representing men in divorce and making sure they were treated fairly. We realized that in order to ensure our clients achieved a good result, we had to work twice as hard and be twice as prepared. That's what wins cases and delivers justice. Call us at 248-356-ADAM. We can explain the law to you, how it applies to your situation, and what can be done to protect your rights. If you become a client, you will be represented by a firm that has pioneered the concept of fair treatment for men in court. You will get straightforward answers to your questions, your phone calls will be returned, and your case will be well prepared before we go to court. Call us at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's award-winning talk show on 101 WRIN.
All right, thank you. Welcome back to our final segment, interviews at 1 a.m., a couple of interesting ones. There's a couple who've been in Afghanistan as reporters, and they were saying, wow, this is pretty rad. They're saying that behind the Taliban is the Pakistan Secret Service. And I'm thinking, those are our allies. These are the people who are giving billions of dollars.
They're more than just our allies, yeah, obviously,
and,
right?
Yeah, and then it came out that this week that it was there. All right, so we're talking about, one of the many things we've been talking about, and you bring up whatever you would like, about, controlling harmful substances. Well, this came off of Yahoo, America's unhealthiest restaurants on Yahoo Health. And number one was Baskin-Robbins. They have something called the Baskin's Health Shake. It has 2,300 calories.
Isn't that unreal?
Now, it doesn't tell people that. I mean, that's how much, that's more than even than I should eat in a day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's more calories. And Denny's, their famous slam breakfasts.
Grand slam.
They have a double cheeseburger that has 116 grams of fat.
116? Oh, I saw this. I actually looked at that because I was just wanted to see how bad it really is.
Yeah, I mean, so it was absolutely so what, I mean, should there be laws? I think there should be laws against
fast food.
Against companies that feed people that. I mean, they can tell you, look, this is more calories than you should have in a day. And if you want to splurge, okay, we're here for you. But,
like the warning on the cig pack, right?
Exactly.
Hey, Peter. Yeah. Bev wrote in and said her husband has been talking about South America and Coca-Cola, and she said she finds it hard to believe that Coke would allow unfair practices in South America. And this and she said, could it be true? Bev, it's true, and her husband is listening right now. So thanks for listening. Enjoys the program. Those are practices that Coca-Cola down in South America and around the world.
Particularly Colombia.
Yeah, trying to prevent them.
Unionization.
Unionization. Again, here we go. But you know what they do down there? They murder them for trying to unionize. So it is true. And there is a song by a friend of ours, David Rovitz, called Coke is the Drink of the Death Squads.
Yeah.
And that's what that's all about. But if you go to davidrovics.com, R-O-V-I-C-S, you can check out this great song that kind of illustrates the situation.
The point. And also, I believe the website is killercoke.org.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Give that a whirl. Make sure that I am right. All right. Let's start going through these calls because we have only about 15 minutes left. Here's John in Sterling Heights wants to talk more about the Tesla car. John, hi. It's Peter and Jeline. You're on the air.
Yeah. How you doing, Peter?
Good.
The one thing about the electric car, it's probably the best car you can buy. It's a Tesla Roadster. That's the first one they had. It goes from 0 to 60 in 4 seconds, just like a Dodge Viper.
But you got to have $109,000.
That's
chicken feed. Now,
for you in Sterling Heights, for the rest of us proletariat, it's a lot of money.
Just don't get married and save your money.
There you go.
Here's the thing. You get 300 miles to a charge.
Okay.
So you're basically paying one quarter penny per mile as what I'm paying now, 50 cents per mile, by buying gasoline. So it's one quarter penny per mile on the electric car.
Yeah.
And the only drawbacks to the electric car, I'll tell you real quick, are the dealerships. They only have like four of them in America.
No.
So you need to have more dealerships so you can get your car serviced, and that will come eventually.
Well, that was true, John, with a lot of these startup cars that tried to buck the big three that never could do it. But thank you. I appreciate that.
Peter?
Yes.
It is killer. coke.org.
Okay, that's good. All the information is right there. Let me see. A caller from his Mac computer says that we're not streaming. I don't know what to say. PBS.org on their front, on their song, or on their show Frontline is called, is there's a film called Is Walmart Good for America? Caller, tell you this.
Yep.
Yeah, and documentary. It's a documentary. Jerry from Detroit.
I think you can find those on YouTube as well.
Yeah. Yep. Here's Sean from Mount Clemens. Sean, hi. Are you there with Marvin?
No. Well, I guess so. Somewhere in the area.
Okay.
I called you guys a couple of months ago. I'm a chiropractor, and actually a third generation, and I can tell you straight up that the AMA did massive studies in the 40s that we should be vegetarians, and the meat and dairy industry didn't like that, and the pharmaceutical industry didn't like that.
Okay.
Because the pharmaceutical industry realizes that the more meat and dairy people eat, the more drugs they can sell. Now, they don't, particularly the FDA, illegally made a law saying that only a drug can treat or cure a disease. And the pharmaceutical companies have been paying the FDA since the 40s. Basically, you cannot legally patent a herb, only a synthetic drug that is approved by the FDA.
Right.
So there aren't nooks. Now, but basically, I believe that man should be living in the tropics. That's kind of like our paradise, our skin's designed for. We can basically don't need clothing. Through centuries or thousands of years, man's migrated towards the north. And in the winter times, as we know, in Michigan, it gets a little chilly, and it's tough to grow fresh fruits and vegetables unless you have a greenhouse.
Yeah, well, I mean, most of the Euro-Americans, our ancestors, came from climates that had harsh winters, and we came to another place with harsh winters. What's up with these folks?
It was survival. You know, we did what we had to do to survive.
I guess.
Three-fourths of the planet's people have dark skin and live in the tropical areas. But I basically believe that the more processed foods and animal products we put in our system, it just drags us down physically and mentally, and then it's natural to use an herb or, unfortunately, even worse, a synthetic drug.
There was an article in somewhere in the last week that said that the consumption of red meat is definitely, you can have a shorter life. That's what they say, basically.
Yeah. I talked to a guy one time. He says, you don't eat meat? I said, no. Well, he said two things. One, he said, you don't eat meat? I said, no. He said, I don't eat vegetables.
Heard that one,
yeah. And the other thing, he said, that he ate 21 meat meals a week. He's probably gone.
I don't know. I've been a vegetarian since I was 17, which has been a while.
Yeah.
But I did start eating meat about a year and a half ago. I've backed off. I go in waves, but I feel a lot better when I don't eat it.
You know what, though? Anything's okay in moderation.
Yeah. You know, I try not to beat myself up too bad.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't eaten meat in decades, and I don't know. I mean, I think that's one of the things that's kept me fairly healthy.
Yes.
All right. Sean, I'm sorry. You have a lot to say, and I'd like to hear more from you, but we got to get some of these last callers in. So thanks for having joined us and sharing that all with us. Here is Kathy in Southfield. Hi, Kathy. It's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for joining us.
I agree with you. Pot should be legalized for multitudinous reasons. My one concern is, have they figured out how to, you talk about random testing, pot stays in your system. You smoke it on the weekend. You go to work Wednesday. You get a random test. Is there something that I don't know about yet?
What do you mean? They can,
you know that it stays in your system.
Yeah,
so
is there some way
it stays in the fat cells.
Yeah.
Right. So how can they tell if you smoked it 3 days ago or 2 weeks ago?
I can't tell you exactly how they can, but I know that a neighbor of mine got popped for drunk driving, and he has long hair, so they decided they should drug test him as well. Huh. And they can tell. There's a new test, all kinds of new testing. They can tell how much THC you have in your blood system. I don't know what it is, but they can tell.
Scary. It's scary. I mean,
I know.
Yeah.
That was new. I didn't know about that.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. Appreciate it. Let's see. You know what I've done? I have, here is, again, shutting Detroit down. Let's see if this works with, that I opened up a different browser. Maybe that was it. I opened up Explorer. But will it open is the other question. I don't know. Haven't all computers been going slower?
Yeah, the mine in here. Good job, Peter.
My daddy taught me in this country everyone's the same. Work hard for your dollar and you never pass the blame. Shots crying on my evening news about how they're losing billions, and it's up to me and you to come running too. Rescue.
Well, you know what? It's actually, they need a remix.
Well, tell them what the song's called.
Shutting Detroit Down.
Yeah. So go to YouTube it, and the video is really cool because it shows all of the great monuments and buildings and a bunch of historical Tiger Stadium. They even show Madonna.
And Kid Rock.
And Bob
our
Seger.
Pal, the Texas, what do they call him now? No longer the
lunatic?
Motor City.
Yeah. Ted Nugent.
No longer. I wonder if he's still there.
He's the Crawford City Madman.
Yeah. They said they got another
Crawford, Texas Madman?
Something.
I don't know.
Here's Richard in Ypsilanti. Richard, hi. It's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for joining us.
How are you doing?
We're doing good.
That's good. Well, I couldn't actually find the video I was trying to find, but just like I talk about something else. But
what were you trying to find?
It was a documentary that was on YouTube about a group called the Gildenberg group or residents, whatever you want to call them.
The Bildenbergers?
Gildenberg.
I bet it's the Bilderbergers or something like that. There's all these conspiracies. I mean, for one thing, the world is run by a conspiracy. I mean, there's some places that have democracy that functions a little better than others, but mostly there's this elite that has control of things. And, you know, depending on the country, there's some places where things are some people would say this country is 100% by the elites, but they give us a little leeway in different aspects of our life. But the major decisions are way out of our hands, and we've got to figure out ways to get it all in our hands if we want to make the democracy real. But go ahead.
Yeah, that's a sad and actually hard part about it. But, I mean, I listen to your show a lot, so I kind of take that you're a conspiracy theorist. And I mean,
he's He's not, though. Neither of us are, really. Neither of us kind of buy much of that stuff.
Well, it depends on what you mean by conspiracy.
There's a conspiracy to take the little man down.
Yeah, and there's also, the system essentially is run by a conspiracy of men who don't meet very much. What I was talking about is the Bilderberg Group, B-I-L-D-E-R-B-E-R-G, Bilderberg. And it says it's
they plan to microchip the population, is that the one?
No, no. I mean, but people get wacky about it. This is an unofficial annual invitation-only conference of about 130 guests, most of whom are persons of influence in the field of politics, business, and banking. The elite group meets annually at luxury hotels or resorts throughout the world, normally in Europe, and once every 4 years in the United States or Canada. So this is there. These are, but I mean, it's not like they plan and they say, all right, we are now going to whatever.
Microchip the population.
Yeah.
There's also the skull and bones.
Yeah, stuff like that. I mean, these are, and there's
that one in California.
The Bohemian Grove,
yes.
And the Club of Rome. And I mean, these people have power. And these are, actually, these are meetings of powerful men that determine how everything's going to roll out. But you know what? I mean, this is not, although some people, here's the conspiracy theorist. The conspiracy theorist, I think, that this collapse of the economy has actually been planned for, and then there's about four, depending on which conspiracy theory you get, about four or five different reasons. I would say that essentially what happens is the system gets out of control, literally out of control. It gets out of the control of anyone, and it breaks down every once in a while. And, oh yeah, there's the Trilateral Commission, there's Skull and Bones, yeah, lots of it. But if you go, let me see, what search engine is this? I can't even tell somehow. But if you go put in
Windows Live,
okay,
searches,
yeah, go any of that, and people, and I don't never know what they say. It's like the Federal Reserve, that, you know, it's like, you know, everything's being run by the Council on Foreign Relations, and so what? I mean, if we get rid of them, everything's okay, or if we get rid of the Federal Reserve, everything's going to be okay. I think there's just the system is more complex than that. I think. Okay, so thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Let's get these last folks in. Here is Sam in Royal Oak. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good.
Hey, I was just calling about the workplace and not at workplace, about illegal
drugs? Yeah.
Substances.
Yeah.
I completely agree with what you said. I don't know how they can try and tell you what you can and can't do while you're not at work. And how does that really make sense to anybody?
Well, I don't know if it makes sense. I mean, it's another way to control us. It's another way often. I mean, if you
they think it's for liability.
Yeah, partly it's for liability. That's what they always say. I mean, partly is that if you have people that are humiliated by having to been watched peeing in a cup so they can analyze your urine, well, maybe that kind of kicks some of the spunk out of you. So you don't want to do something like unionize or the like. I'm trying to look to see. I can't really read this. How many commercials we have. I think we can do this. Nick, can you give me like two sentences?
How's it going, Peter?
Good.
That's
one sentence.
I just want to throw out there that I'm pro for everything you say. You bring inspiration to me, and I just appreciate that you even had this show.
Well, thank you.
That is so nice.
I appreciate it. In fact, that was so short, I am going to be cool and get Cody on. Cody, two sentences. Can you do it? You're on the air.
Cody's
gone. Celine Jordan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
Roger, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Al.
Al Slayer, thank you so much. And
thank you to the audience.
Is our guest still? Or maybe we shouldn't say. Never mind.
What? Oh. Oh, well, yeah, we had a former phone screener stop by.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So we'll talk next week. Thanks for having joined us.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Hello.
How are you?
It's Mike. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you Monday morning with America's toughest sheriff, Joe Arpaio, from Maricopa County, Arizona. Also, Monday, we'll interview an actual savant, totally Rain Man, all the way. It should be very interesting. And we'll follow up on a news story involving a nude man who walked into a Tennessee Stop and Go, act like nothing was going on, just bought some beer, ended up caught, thrown in jail. We've got his number. We'll see what we can do with that. And we'll give you details to get you qualified to win tickets to the Final Four. All right. We'll see you Monday morning with Mike in the Morning on 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Yeah, all right. I'll see you guys there.
Mike in the Morning on 101 WRIF.
You'll come into the ER, they're scared, they're angry, they're young, they're 47, 52. It's like they're not believing that they're having a heart attack.
Some pretty amazing things are happening at DMC Huron Valley Sinai Hospital.
We can come in and within 10 minutes get them on our table, open the blockage with a stent of lung, and then the comments they're saying afterwards, thank you for saving my life. I can't believe you guys can fix us here.
In this area, only Huron Valley is performing emergency angioplasty on site.
We had a West Bloomfield fireman. He said the patient said, well, maybe we should go to another hospital. And they said, well, no, it looks like you're having a heart attack. I think we need to take you to Huron Valley because they fix people there.
When your family has a medical emergency, from scrapes and breaks to strokes and heart attacks,
they're going to have minimal, if any, heart muscle damage because they were treated so quickly at Huron Valley.
DMC Huron Valley Sinai, 29-minute ER guarantee at Commerce and Commerce in Commerce.
My name is Nancy Brody, and I am the manager of the cath lab at Huron Valley Sinai.
Jets, helicopters, turbine engines. If these sounds get you excited, then you should discover the opportunities awaiting you at the Michigan Institute of Aviation and Technology. Get hands-on training and learn over 40 precision skills that you can use in a variety of fields like aviation and renewable energy. Graduates of MIAT have access to exciting and high-paying jobs working on jets, helicopters, and turbine engines. Thousands of skilled workers are needed, and you can obtain these skills in 20 months or less. New classes starting May 5th. Take a tour of Michigan Institute of Aviation and Technology's campus at Willow Run Airport or New Boston and get an education that will take you places. Call 877-NEW-GOAL. That's 877-NEW-GOAL. Michigan Institute of Aviation and Technology. Take your career to new heights. Call 877-NEW-GOAL. That's 877-639-4625. Michigan Institute of Aviation and Technology. Your career.
101.1 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. This the other week, I can't even remember why I was using the George Orwell 1984 analogy about Oceania, the country that Winston Smith was an inhabitant of, that was always at war, although the enemies changed from time to time. And Afghanistan, to some of us that are really steeped in history, this seems like a war that's been going on for 130 or 140 years, if you think of all the empires that have come and gone through that country in Asia. Most recently, it's been brought to our attention by after September 11th, 2001. We've been at war since then. It's not always exactly clear who we're at war with. Whoa, aren't we at war with the Taliban? Well, we'll talk with our guests about both the history, our involvement, the recent history of other countries there, and what our involvement, the war now, the Obama war in Afghanistan, what that portends for our country. My guests are Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gould, and they began reporting on Afghanistan as far back as 1981. They were doing it for CBS News, and they produced a documentary for PBS, Afghanistan Between Three Worlds. In 1983, they returned for Nightline and contributed stories to the McNeil-Lehrer News Hour, and for over 20 years, they've continued to research, write, and lecture about Afghanistan's history and U.S. foreign policy. We're in there pretty deep, so we need to know this. The book is Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. The website for it is invisiblehistory.com. Let's welcome Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gould. They're at their home in the Boston area. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
So you guys are not exactly newcomers to this by any stretch of the imagination. How did you happen to wind up in Afghanistan in 1981?
The irony was that we were actually focused on the economy. And considering what's going on today, I think that it's very, very much us coming full circle. During the late 1970s, there was a lot of hope because detente was going to reduce the military budget, and there was a lot of hope that there was going to be a reinvestment in the civilian economy. And I think that in areas like Detroit, the idea of reinvestment starting back in 1979 might have been something to help avoid what's going on there today.
Sure.
But what happened, ironically, after we interviewed people like Paul Warnke, who was the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty negotiator, and John Kenneth Galbraith, who really helped explain why it was so important that we actually reduce arms spending and start reinvesting in the civilian economy. And what happened December 27, 1979, as we were literally waiting for the progress that was going to come from this reduced arms spending and the associated benefits, the Soviets crossed the border into Afghanistan, and it seemed as if overnight, suddenly the idea of any kind of reduced arms spending, of any kind of detente, of any negotiation simply ended. And it really caught our attention. There was no public debate. It all seemed to happen inside Washington in some sort of magical way.
So how were the two of you able to go to Afghanistan in 1981? That was pretty much closed territory, and a huge war was going on. What were the circumstances?
Well, it all derived from that first documentary. That summer, I had been working for the Christian Broadcasting Company. I had a public affairs program like yours on the station, the local station in Boston, and they were airing a lot of stuff about the SALT Treaty and about the importance of not agreeing to any kind of compromise with the Soviet Union. And so as a result of that, when the Soviets went in there, we said, my God, this is really a story. And at about 2 weeks after the Soviets went in, 1,135 Western journalists were kicked out. And so the place completely became closed off to any idea, and it was the source of wild speculation. So I said to Liz, I said, you know, this is a great opportunity to take where we have already started and to take it one step further. And let's see if we, just for the heck of it, let's see if we can get permission to go in there with our own crew as an independent. And then we'll see what's going on, what a great story that would be.
Who did you seek permission from? I mean, who was the ruling powers? The Afghan government?
Well, yeah. We went to the United Nations, and they had an embassy at the United Nations, and we went to their ambassador, who happened to be an Oxford-educated guy. And we explained the situation to him, and he said, you know, he said, I completely understand what you're saying, and I completely agree. He said, but getting the people back in Kabul to accept your proposal will be the difficult part. So we said, fine. Well, we made a formal request, and we said, well, this is who we are, this is what we want to do, and this is where we've come from. We told him what we just told you. This is how we got here. So he said, fine. So within 6 months, about 6 months later, the phone call came that we had got the permission to do it. So we had to rush together. We had to scramble and throw together a crew, and we went to the various networks and asked them, petitioned them to see who would be interested in basically funding the expedition. And CBS News was very aggressive about picking that story up, so we went with them.
Yeah, and how many times have the two of you been back since?
Well, you know, we went there initially. We always felt that the story was very much about a story of as much, if not more, about Washington than it was about Afghanistan. So we were there in 1981, and then we saw a lot of things that were not in conformity with the story that we were being presented. The story in the United States and in Western Europe was being presented as this Cold War story of the United States against the Soviet Union, and these poor, fiercely independent freedom fighters were fighting the struggle. Well, we got there and we discovered it was a very complicated story. The Soviet Union had a relationship with Afghanistan for many, many, many decades, and that the United States had basically aligned itself with Pakistan, and so Afghanistan had become caught up in this kind of Cold War confrontation. So we went back again with Roger Fisher from the Harvard Negotiation Project 2 years later, in 1983, and with the objective of finding out exactly what it was that would get the Soviets to leave Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
So that was in 1983, so we went back again. We spent some time there in 1983. And then after that, it became such a burden on us that we finally just said in 1987, we really can't keep the story up any longer. So at that point, we started writing some screenplays, and we actually got the interest of Oliver Stone. So he wanted to go back to Afghanistan, and of course he wanted to go back right at the moment when the Kabul government that we had, you know, that we had had the permission from fell in 1992. So once again, it was a very inopportune time. But we went back again in 2002 with Sima Wali, who was a person that we had, she was the first exile from Afghanistan in 1978. And so we saw the post-war destruction and during that time period. So we were there during the Soviet occupation. We were not there during the Mujahideen period in the 1990s and the Taliban period, but we were there after that.
The book is Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. I'm interviewing the authors, Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gould. People think of the most of the problems that have extended out of Afghanistan as being the result of Reagan-era politics. And back in the Mujahideen and the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban come out of that. But actually, the genesis was in the Carter administration, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, Zbigniew Brzezinski, as National Security Advisor, was definitely playing a global card when he tried to help the Soviets invade Afghanistan.
Well, actually, that's all part of what was not really understood during the 1980s, when the American media, the mainstream media, really was doing a great disservice to the American people by presenting the story about the Soviet invasion in very stark, Cold War terminology. It was the evil empire against the holy warriors. And what we came back with, actually, that's what we realized, that there was a very complex story going on inside Afghanistan. It really had to do with a civil war within Afghanistan, and it had to do with the issue of women's rights and modernization. And the Afghans who were still staying inside Afghanistan, who were still supporting the government, the Marxist government, many of whom were not communists, but were still supporting the progressive ideas that government was promoting at the time, and that very much focused on the issue of education for women as one of the central tenets of it. And the Mujahideen, who were being financed from Pakistan, actually were the fundamentalists, who today we now refer to as terrorists and extremists, but back then they were called holy warriors, and they were in many cases burning schools down. So this dichotomy was something that really got our attention, but we were also very aware of the fact that the American media was completely disinterested in it. So these ideas really were carrying the whole story throughout the 1980s, but the revelation that we had sensed all along was that there was something odd, especially when we brought Roger Fisher of the Harvard Negotiation Project in 1983 and discovered to Afghanistan, and discovered that the Soviets were actually quite desperate at that point to get out. And when we brought that story back to Nightline, the way the story was framed really made it clear that there was a desire almost to not really go that way, not promote that possibility, which we found to be quite disturbing. And once again, this is not just an issue of Russophobe like Dr. Brzezinski, who was well known to really want to destroy the Soviet Union. That certainly was a lifetime goal for him.
He actually is quoted as saying that he wanted Afghanistan to be the Soviet Union's Vietnam.
Absolutely. In fact, he was quite proud of the fact in 1998 he was interviewed and publicly announced that unlike the history that had been presented by the American media, that it was a big shock that the Soviets crossed that border, there had been a provocation authorized by President Carter at least 6 months preceding the Soviet invasion that allowed for as Brzezinski said, to enhance the chances that the Soviets would be drawn into the Afghan trap. And once they did cross the border, he was absolutely gleeful over the idea that we could now give them their own Vietnam.
My guests are Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gould. You're listening to The Peter Werby Show. Their book is Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. Their website is invisiblehistory.com. It's published by City Lights, just a fabulous imprint. You can go to citylights.com to find out more about this book and also their whole line of texts as well. Now, the Taliban was not thought of so awfully by the United States prior to September 11th. Governor George Bush Bush of Texas invited him there to, you know, Houston or wherever to talk about oil. I believe, and I think it was in April, just when George Bush became president, that tens of millions of dollars were sent to the Taliban for the fact that they had eradicated poppy production. Suddenly, of course, we learn that the center, Al-Qaeda, was lodged somewhere up in the mountains, and the United States, to eradicate that threat and to punish the malefactors, invaded, what was it, in October of 2001?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How responsible were the Taliban for Al-Qaeda, both in toleration, or was there any connection? I mean, because it wasn't like they had an office in downtown Kabul.
Well, you know, the people really have not been given the true goods about the Taliban, who they are. The Taliban was quite literally the creation of the Pakistani intelligence organization called the ISI, which for the specific purpose of clearing out the riffraff in Afghanistan left over from the anti-Soviet war, and basically setting it up in order to, so that Pakistan would have what they refer to as their strategic depth, their back porch secured for their eventual and believable their commitment to their war against India, their permanent war against India. And so that was going on during that time period. And as a result of that, the United States, as I said, was aligned with Pakistan. So the United States actually never really had a foreign policy towards Afghanistan. And the more you research and the more documents you come across, the more you realize that we had a policy for Pakistan. We didn't have a policy for Afghanistan. Basically, the policy was to do whatever Pakistan wanted to do, and Pakistan wanted complete control of Afghanistan. So even that issue about the drugs, and the United States did pay off the Taliban at one point to stop growing drugs, and actually it was, once again, it was misperceived in the United States. The Taliban did stop growing the drugs, but what they did was they pulled them off the market. They had been very actively involved in marketing narcotics during that time period and during their rise, and had been funding their war against what was left of the Mujahideen, Ahmad Shah Massoud, as an example, in the Northern Alliance. And so as a result of that, what they did was they just simply pulled the stuff off the market. For a given period of time, the United States government took the credit for having, you know, taken that, you know, having stopped them in the opium production. However, it went right back up again as soon as the market, the price of the market, they drove the price back up in the marketplace, and they went right back into business again.
Mm-hmm. The connection, though, between the Taliban and Al-Qaeda.
The connection between Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Taliban were actually hosting Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was the name of the database. Al-Qaeda means the base. It was the database from which the CIA and the ISI and the Saudi Arabian intelligence drew their fighters from the Arab world. The Arab world was very pleased to get rid of some of these people. These were terrorists. These were thugs. They had been jailed in many of these Arab countries. They basically went to the jails. They gave them a plane ticket, and they said, go fly to Peshawar, and you can go fight the Russians and leave us alone. And so that was what Al-Qaeda was. Now, what the Taliban did was, in Afghanistan, the Taliban acted as their hosts out there. They allowed Osama bin Laden, at the behest, by the way, of the CIA. Osama bin Laden didn't go back to Afghanistan on his own. Apparently, he was in Somalia, I believe, at the time, and he went to the government, and he said, they came to the CIA, and they said, what do you want us to do with this guy? And they said, oh, well, just send him to Afghanistan. He won't be any harm there.
Huh. And there's also another point, too, about the Taliban and the creation by Pakistani ISI. What Afghans were involved with the Taliban were actually boys that were being raised in the refugee camps, who in many instances, these were families under terrible circumstances. They had no way to educate their children or sometimes to feed them well. So the madrasas that these boys were sent to was really was sometimes the only way they could take care of their children. And, of course, they also were being heavily indoctrinated. But the Afghan Taliban really were not the ones running the operation. It was always the Pakistani Taliban, and that's a very important delineation. So even today, when you hear about this idea of Taliban light, you know, this sort of moderate Taliban,
sure,
this does not exist. This is a fantasy, okay, that the that what you really have is of those Afghans who only went into the Taliban out of desperation, the only thing that would be necessary would be for Afghanistan to actually be assisted in creating a genuine economy. And those types of Taliban would simply disappear. They were never ideological to begin with in many cases. So these are the kinds of problems that are really emerging now with this confusion over the origin of the Taliban and the delineation between Pakistani and Afghan Taliban, and really what is so disturbing about the kind of idea that, you know, we have to remember in 1998, the United Nations came up with a term called gender apartheid to describe the horrific, outrageous treatment that women and men who supported women were being treated by the Taliban in Afghanistan. If Americans today actually think that Afghans in any way, shape, or form want that kind of horror back again, this is a terrible, this is, you know, the ultimate victim being victimized once again.
Mm-hmm. Well, on September 11, 2001, there was a mass murder carried out by these right-wing religious zealots, and the United States responded by destroying the Taliban government. I guess I'm wondering, I mean, apprehension and suppression of those forces that committed an act like that is certainly warranted. Was the overthrow of the government, which has led to this ongoing war, was that necessary? Was it legitimate in your two opinions?
Well, one of the things that we really now know is the fact that when the Taliban basically disappeared, they disappeared back to their own homeland, which was Pakistan, and they never really were defeated. So that is one of the problems now that is really part of the confusion over what is happening today and what the real meaning of trying to to present this Taliban element within Afghanistan as if it has any legitimate indigenous origins in Afghanistan.
There were elements of the Taliban that were being funded and supplied during the American invasion by the Pakistani military and actually fighting against American troops while Pakistan was claiming that they were allied on our side. So, I mean, once again, we've got to get the Pakistan issue and its separation from India and its relationship to Afghanistan have been core issues since 1947 and the creation of Pakistan and an independent India. And these are really things that policy issues that have been left over from British colonialism that were endorsed by the United Nations and have never really been addressed. And so Pakistan has acted as a magnet for extremism, Islamic extremism, and this has been very well known by Western intelligence agencies, but Pakistan, because of its position in the Cold War, was able to jockey a very, very positive position for itself with a Western alliance, and it also has very close relations with China. So it makes it very complicated, but the issue comes down to Pakistan's relationship with Afghanistan and India, and that has really got to be number one priority in resolving anything that goes on in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've used the phrase, I think, correctly so many times about complex issues. And the simple issue is that we're fighting Al-Qaeda. Even sometimes people even think we're fighting Al-Qaeda in Iraq. But in Afghanistan, I wonder, remember in Vietnam, anybody that was dead was counted as a Viet Cong rebel, even though if it turned out to be, the non-combatants. So, and I saw an article in The Nation magazine that said that the whole idea of who the Taliban is pretty complicated as well. So who is the United States and the other and the allied countries there? Who exactly are they fighting?
Well, at this point, the Pakistani ISI is the institution behind the Taliban and a number of other terrorist groups that operate both in Kashmir and in Afghanistan, as well as in Chenyar and a number of other places. Once again, we're fighting a pan-Islamism, which is a very hybrid, extreme version of Islam. That was not the kind of Islam that was in Afghanistan before this. But that has been eradicated by this extremist effort. And as I said, the issue about the complex nature of this in regard to China as an example. I mean, China now, it's been even further complicated because the United States is in debt to Saudi Arabia and China. Okay, so in terms of our own foreign policy at this point. We're really not completely in charge of our own foreign policy. We have a lot of factors that we have to consider when dealing with this part of the world. And just remember, the Saudis have been in there for some time now. At this point, they've intermarried with Afghan tribal families, so it's a family issue for the Saudis. And the Chinese are right next door, and they're an enormous financial force in terms of the influence in this area. So we've really kind of got, we have to realize that we have a limited position in terms of this politically at this point.
Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gould, I just looked at this, I can't remember the last time an interview has gone by so quickly, and what people want to, I'm sure, understand in the immediate is what are we doing and what should we do? At one point, I mean, I've been pretty much of an anti-war activist all my life, so I would say, you know, immediate withdrawal, and then all of a sudden, here come back these Islamic extremist forces that are destroying schools, now, and that could mean very easily a return of those forces. So it seems we're once again, thanks to George Bush, damned if we do and damned if we don't.
Well, it really does have to be understood now that, you know, ever since 2001, when the United States first believed that it had eradicated the Taliban's control of Afghanistan and basically walked away, you have to realize that actually was the second major walkaway. In 1989, after the original al-Qaeda base was actually created to fight the Soviets, was left in place, literally with billions of dollars worth of training and weapons and Swiss bank accounts and learning how to deal with the drug world. All, you know, this was all going on during the 1980s.
2 minutes left. I just wanted to give you the 2-minute warning bell, so I want you to be able to finish because what you're about to say is critical. So go ahead.
Okay. What I'd like to sum up by saying is that unfortunately, as you said, the George Bush administration got us involved in a war in Iraq, which was the wrong place we needed to be at the time. The response was wild and irresponsible in terms of the way the United States put an army into Iraq when Afghanistan was the issue. We could have gone in there in 2001, and we were welcomed with open arms. Now we have a lot of making up to do, and we can do that with the help of the Afghan people. They are very much, they want the same thing from the world that we want from the world. They want security. They want peace. They've been at war for 30 years at this point. And if the United States can help them establish some kind of security and stop killing innocent civilians, we can be successful there. But we have to understand that that is what the issue really comes down to, because Islamic extremism will spread from there, and it will spread very quickly unless we somehow figure out how to work with the Afghan people in terms of reestablishing some kind of democracy. And they are ready for democracy, take my word for it.
The great social critic Noam Chomsky says of Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story, in this penetrating inquiry based on careful study of an intricate web of political, cultural, and historical factors that lie in the immediate background and enriched by unique direct observation at critical moments, Fitzgerald and Gould tell the real story of how they came to be there and what we can expect next. If we are going to be able to make the decisions we have to as an informed citizenry, it's books like this that need to be read. It's Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. You can go to the website, invisiblehistory.com. It's published by City Lights, an important publisher, citylights.com. You can go to my website if all of this went by you too quickly, Peter Werbe, Werbe.com. Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gould, thanks for having joined me.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Consider winter over. Brighton Harley-Davidson in Brighton and American Harley-Davidson and Buell in Ann Arbor declares spring. That's right. We're done with winter and ready to ride. It's time to check out the bikes. We could go on and on about the biggest selection, best service, blah, blah, blah. Here's what you need to know. At Brighton Harley-Davidson and American Harley-Davidson in Buell, the ride-free guarantee made of iron ends March 31st. Trade up your 07 or 08 Sportster and get MSRP towards the purchase of a new Harley Davidson Big Twin, or buy a new Sportster and get the same guarantee for a year. Plus, no prep fees, no handling fees, from 6.49% APR for up to 60 months. No bullshit. pricing. Winter's over. Let's ride. Brighton, Harley-Davidson in Brighton and American Harley-Davidson in Buell and Ann Arbor. Proud to be in Michigan. When we're not riding American-made bikes, we're driving American-made cars. Go to BrightonHD.com or AmericanHD.com for more info. Let's ride.
Okay, you think maybe your life would be better served if you were not plunked down in front of the TV with a game controller in your hands? Put the first-person shooter away for a while and check out all the fun you've been missing at the Overtime Grill and Tap Room, Waterford's upscale sports and entertainment spot. This isn't small or boring. We're talking a 17,000-square-foot grill and tap room with a 4,000-square-foot gaming area, bowling, hoops, arcade, video games. There's a place for you at the bar with nightly beverage specials and great grill menus. Watch the game on multiple big screens. Texas Hold'em Tuesdays, trivia or karaoke Wednesdays. Friday and Saturdays, hit the dance floor with your favorite tunes. Power Hour Wednesdays, dollar draft to $2 wells. Work hard all day? Then come play. Check out OvertimeGrillAndTap.com. That's over, T-Y-M-E, GrillAndTap.com. Get off the couch. Get to mingling and having some fun, for crying out loud. 4724 Dixie Highway in Waterford. Get to the action at Overtime Grill and Tap Room.
Meet a friend, a lover, an assassin, whatever you want, whoever you want, the Dollhouse can provide.
From Joss Whedon, creator of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
So the stories are true. Programmable people made to order.
People volunteered for this.
So we're told.
Eliza Dushku stars in the year's most original new series, Dollhouse.
You made Echo an assassin?
She's living a dream.
Whose dream?
Imagine a place where people are imprinted to be anyone you need.
You really are the perfect woman.
You asked for me.
But when they wipe away a memory...
Did I fall asleep?
For a little while.
Do they wipe away a soul?
Actions have consequences. What if they didn't?
Don't miss the new show that has Joss Whedon fans blogging their brains out.
Awesome. Amazing.
Anything Joss does is magic.
Dollhouse, Fox Fridays after the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Watch Dollhouse Friday on Fox 2 Detroit.
Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, the host of the radio show Hire at Dawn. Now that it's spring, it's time to fix up your home. Whether it's a new roof, siding, windows, paint, concrete drive, gutters, deck, landscaping, or any other project you've been itching to get done, we can help make it happen. So tune in this weekend to Hire It Done, or go to HireItDone.com and let my pre-screen contractors compete for your business. Don't put that project off any longer. Visit HireItDone.com today. Get your project started by Metro Detroit's most professional contractors.
Centerfold Lounge is giving you what you want. The hottest swimming, sexiest dances, rock and roll, and the best drink specials in town. Mondays, enjoy $15 buckets. Tuesday, ice cold Miller products are only $4. And then Wednesdays, get in the spirit with half-off pitchers. Celebrate happy hour Monday through Friday from 2 to 6 with $4.50 drinks. Saturdays, half-off everything until 8 p.m. Couples are always welcome and pay no cover. Open 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. Monday through Saturday and 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. on Sunday. John R., 1 block south of 8 Mile Road.
Centerfold!
101 WRAF and Diet Pepsi want to hear what rocks you. Log on to WRAF.com and tell us your Diet Pepsi Rocks playlist for your chance to win great prizes, including iPod Nanos and a grand prize vacation for two to the Hyatt Regency Scottsdale Resort and Spa at Gainey Ranch. Enjoy Diet Pepsi and their greatest hits, cherry, vanilla, lemon, and lime for a limited time only.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. One of the things that I'm always advising people to do is to engage with the world. I mean, it's one thing to just to read about things, to watch things, and that's good. I mean, information is terrific, and that's one of the subjects we're going to talk about with my guest. But it's also getting out there in the streets, being with people. And I'm not just talking about demonstrations. I'm talking about meetings. I'm talking about rallies. I'm talking about conferences. Where you meet people like you that have the same idea, and there's a way in which quantity transforms quality. That is, if you get a bunch of people together, there's more of a feeling and there's more that you can do. Well, my next guest is someone who's been on the Peter Werby Show before. He's Matthew Rothschild. He's the editor of the Progressive Magazine and host of Progressive Radio. It's a weekly public affairs program that's nationally syndicated. He's the author of the book, You Have No Rights, Stories of America in the Age of Repression. time, and the Progressive magazine is celebrating its 100th anniversary. And this is a magazine you should get. You can go to progressive.org and see all about it. And so when you're trying to wade through the networks and the cables, and if you still got a local paper to look at, it's you can fact check it by the Progressive magazine, and it's done that kind of service for people for 100 years. Joining us from his office in Madison, Wisconsin, the headquarters of the Progressive magazine, let's welcome back Matthew Rothschild. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Peter. Thanks so much for having me back on.
Well, you must be pretty excited about 100 years of a magazine.
You know, we're 100 years old and we still have our teeth. Yeah, it's been just so much fun working here. I've been here the last... Wow, I got here in 1983, so I've been here 26 years, more than a quarter of the Progressive's life. But it's really humbling to go back through the old volumes all the way back to 1909, which is what I've been doing over these last 2 years, and reading the great people who've contributed to the Progressive over the years, Jane Addams and Helen Keller and James Baldwin and Martin Luther King and people like that. It's just amazing to see not only the people, but the continuity of concern about progressive values, about civil rights and civil liberties and free speech and corporate power. The concern for corporate power, which is so big a part of the progressive movement back at the turn of the 20th century and is so big a part of what we're dealing with right now.
Well, tell us, maybe it's actually a good way to leap into all this, is give us your definition of what progressive means. It meant something very specific. In fact, there was even a progressive movement back in the early part of the 20th century. And what it means today, sometimes people just think it's sort of a synonym for liberal or leftist. What does progressive mean in terms, well, maybe take us through it. What did it mean in 1909? What does it mean to you, Matthew Rothschild, today in terms of the magazine with that name? And what do you think it means in general?
Yeah, the progressive definition here at this progressive magazine, at this institution, has been the same really for 100 years. That is that we want more democracy. We want a cleaner electoral system, that we want civil liberties and civil rights protected and the environment preserved. We want corporate power restrained both over the economy and the political system. And this is where the progressive differs from Teddy Roosevelt progressivism. The progressive here has been opposed to almost every U.S. intervention except for World War II. We have viewed since World War I U.S. interventions pretty much serving the interests of multinational corporations like, you know, Halliburton or Blackwater in Iraq. That's just part of a process that we've observed in this magazine throughout the years. So those are the real constants of the progressive ideology from the back in the day, and that's what we believe in today. I know it's a loose term floated around by people from, you know, mainstream Democrats to left-wingers, but we identify as progressives, and we really believe it's important to get democratic control of corporate power, and we believe it's really important to stop being an empire.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a good definition. It's one I would adhere to. And let's actually go back to just a few years after the beginning of the Progressive magazine in, like, say, 1917. How did you said that the magazine opposed all the wars of the U.S. other than World War II. Well, World War I, it was pretty dicey here if you didn't support the war, and a lot of publications were suppressed, and the post office refused to mail them. What was the Progressive magazine's stance on World War I, and how did it fare during that era of great repression of civil liberties?
This is one of the high points of the Progressive magazine, because the founder of the Progressive was fighting Bob La Follette, Robert La Follette, the senator from Wisconsin, and he was one of just a handful of senators to oppose U.S. entry into World War I, and for that he was called a traitor. He was burned in effigy. He got death threats. He was almost expelled from the Senate, and he stood his ground, and he was reelected senator then a couple years later, and he ran for president in 1924 and got 5 million votes. But in 1917, it took a lot of courage to oppose U.S. entry into World War I. He had predicted crushing attack on civil liberties that then ensued, and he was almost a victim of that attack himself. So it was incredible. We ran a story in 1917 about a preacher who was beaten up just for saying he was a pacifist. And then, of course, Eugene Victor Debs was thrown into jail, the leader of the Socialist Party, for opposing the war and telling people not to enlist. So It was a real chilly time there in World War I. We've had other chilly times like that. I'm thinking of Japanese-American internment camps or McCarthyism and the period we just got through with Bush-Cheney. So that's another continuity that you can examine if you go back as I did through the last 100 years. And we've got an issue coming out, Peter, our special anniversary issue that's at the printer right now that takes the best of every year of the progressive and puts it onto one page. So we have a 100-page issue from 1909, 1910, all the way to the present. So you can really see the history of the United States and the history of the progressive movement unfold.
Well, and you've got so many things going with this 100th anniversary of the progressive. Now this, and I'm not confusing the two, am I? There's also separately the book, Democracy in Print, the Best of the Progressive Magazine, 1909 to 2009, which you edited. That's separate, correct?
Yeah, that's separate, and that has just come out from the University of Wisconsin Press. It's really a handsome cover on the book, and it's got some of the best writing we've ever had. So whereas in the special issue we just reduced things to a bite size, here you can see the long essay by James Baldwin, Letter to My Nephew, or you can see, you know, Martin Luther King's writing or June Jordan's writing, or, you know, you can see an article by Murray Kempton, the old writer for the New York Review of Books, who is writing about the Emmett Till trial at some length. And it's amazing to just see the different writers and see the strength of the writing throughout. So the book is for people who enjoy things in a little more detail and can, you know, spend their time with a book on their lap and reading article after an article. The magazine is more for people who just, you know, want to flip pages and grab a bite here and grab a bite there.
And as I said at the beginning, you can go to progressive.org. There'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com, to all of this as well. It would take maybe too much time here to just name everybody who's ever written for the progressive that would make them go, oh, really? But in the press release for the book comes out May 1st, that we should tell people that. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. But you mentioned interviews with any number of prominent political and cultural figures like the Dalai Lama, Allen Ginsberg, Amy Goodman, Harold Pinter, Patti Smith, Susan Sarandon. Those seem like they were almost all those in the last 15 years. Matthew Rothschild, are those ones that you were responsible for?
Well, I pushed getting interviews in the magazine, monthly interviews, when I got here in 1983. It was on my, you know, 10 things to improve the progressive agenda that I came in the door with. And some of these, Allen Ginsberg, for instance, was an interview I did myself, and it was one of the most fun things I've done in my umpteen years here. The others were done by other people, but it gives you a nice range. I mean, there's an interview that Katrina Vandenhoevel, now the editor of The Nation magazine, did with the old Russian poet Yevgeny Yevtushenko, and I remember that coming in the door here at about 100 pages, and it was my task as a young editor at the time to reduce it to about 10 or 12 pages.
Ooh.
But it was a beautiful interview, even at great length, and I hope I didn't do damage by cutting it.
Well, you know, actually, now that I just had a flash, I think you reprinted, or printed, rather, an interview that I did with somebody, but I can't for the life of me remember who. If you go to progressive.org, is there any search mechanism?
No, I'm going to go to Google right now. We're talking, I don't know.
You can find it?
We do these interviews, and it's, you know, I think interviews are one way for people in a magazine of ideas like ours to really see another human being and hear another human being's voice as opposed to just reckoning with the ideas. And it's nice to get a feel for the individual. Similarly, we have an activism page in the Progressive always called On the Line, where you can see people, for instance, you know, if you're in Detroit fighting for auto workers there and keeping the industry there, we would have pictures of that. Or if you're somewhere else in the country and you're fighting against, you know, these trade agreements that have hurt us, we'll have photos of that as well. So it's something that we've been trying to push over the last 20 years, and I think the interviews are some of the most accessible parts of the Progressive.
One of the things, as I was saying, or as I introduced this, that it's important to get information. I have a very defined point of view, and I think, Matthew Rothschild, you articulated it pretty well when you described what Progressive have meant. So I would say one could read this and pretty much get a real sense of what's in the world. If you go, well, I don't know, that's too ideological for me, at least understand that also ideological are the daily papers, what's left of them. So is the cable news. So is the nightly news. And this is a reality check. I mean, sometimes you read about something like World War One back there, and you go, yeah, there's a super patriotism going on. There's this repression of anybody who even questions the wisdom of it. And then you get the progressive that says, you know, this is ridiculous that the United States is going into this war in Europe. And I would challenge people to try to dredge out of their memory, why did the United States fight in World War One? And I would bet 90% of the listeners can't remember a single thing. And if you can, some of these unrestricted submarine warfare and the Zimmerman notes, stuff like that, that wasn't enough to lose 150,000 men or something like that. Oh, yes, I have a guest here, don't I? He's, sorry, Matthew Rothschild, who is the editor of the Progressive magazine, also the editor of Democracy in Print, the best of the Progressive magazine, 1909 to 2009. And also there's going to be a big celebration planned on May Day, the traditional workers' holiday in Madison, Wisconsin, where the Progressive magazine is centered. And you've got some big names up there, Robert Redford, Jesse Jackson, Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman, a lot of elected officials, too.
Yeah, Peter, and well, elected officials, Senator Russ Feingold is going to be here, Representative Dennis Kucinich, presidential candidate is going to be here, where there are people like Howard Zinn is going to be here, and Barbara Ehrenreich, and Katha Pollitt, and Jim Hightower, so it's a great gathering. Cindy Sheehan, Naomi Klein, a great gathering of progressive intellectuals and activists and scholars and also elected officials. So I invite anyone who's listening to go to our website at progressive.org and take a look at this 100th anniversary conference here in Madison, Wisconsin on May 1st and 2nd, and I invite you to come. There's another thing happening on April 30th, which is a concert, a benefit concert for the Progressive with Ani DeFranco and Dar Williams and the Indigo Girls. So if that's what you're into, it would be a great time to see all those incredibly talented musicians at once.
And how did you happen to get Robert Redford to this?
Well, I don't even know the answer to that myself. I mean, Robert Redford has been a subscriber to the Progressive for many years, and I knew that, and I asked, I contacted his secretary, his right-hand woman, and we entered into a conversation, and she said, well, she'll ask him, and he said yes, to my astonishment. So he's coming out as our honorary chair, and he's going to give a talk on Saturday night, May 2nd, here in Madison, and then I'm going to do a little Q&A with him on stage, a little conversation.
I was going to say, you certainly should be doing that. I would tell the audience, too, if some of those names went by you, like Barbara Ehrenreich and Jim Hightower and Katha Pollitt, and when those names are mentioned, you say, who the hell is that? I think it'd be worth your while, if you're interested in the subjects that this broadcast takes up, to find out who they are. Even if I get email from people, well, I only agree with you about 10%. Well, if you know, there's a lot of people that disagree with me 100%. So if that 10% is there, it's worth reading those people that represent the other 90%, again, to give what I would call a reality check. Well, let's go back a little into the history of the Progressive magazine. It's centenary is this year, 100 years of broadcasting. And one of the things, you mentioned a benefit concert on
April 30th,
and that's in Madison. Funding is always an issue for progressive magazines, and why is that? For instance, Time Magazine doesn't have a fundraiser, for instance.
Well, I could use one now. Have you looked at it lately? It's anorexic. They lost all their ads. They're down to about 45 pages.
You know what? I've never looked at it. It's a waste of time to read. Yeah.
Well, they're reason they're about as skinny as we are. Their reason for being is gone, though. I mean, Newsweek and Time, the conceit was that you don't have to read the newspapers. They will tell you once a week what's important or what's in the news. But everyone now gets the news, you know, within hours. They don't need something a week later to tell them what just happened. They've gotten it on the internet, and it's already passed people by the time they get the magazine. So that's why they're really struggling. I think magazines of ideas and politics and investigative reporting, like the progressives, have a little bit of a different role and are not so affected by this internet challenge that is afflicting print so badly, because we can get above the day-to-day and say, look, this is a super important issue that you haven't focused on enough. Why don't you take a look at it here? I did a cover story a couple months ago, for instance, on something called NORTHCOM, the U.S. Northern Command that patrols the United States, the Pentagon patrolling the U.S. That's not supposed to happen. So there's room for that kind of investigative reporting in a monthly magazine or a bi-monthly, for instance. But the weeklies are just are dead right now.
Well, the kind of subject matter that you take up is so critical to a democracy. And in fact, the book that's going to be coming out that you edited about the 100 years of publishing is called Democracy in Print. And that's usually the first item that publication or that governments put in their sites once there is something like World War I or the Vietnam War or World War II, something like that. So you went through the publication, went through World War I without interruption, without suppression, and it's hard to believe that during the 1940s and 1950s that the publication wasn't accused of being communist, or was it?
Oh, it was accused of that all the time. It's often they didn't mind it, though. I mean, they came out fighting in the 1950s. Actually, the most popular issue ever published of the Progressive magazine was in 1954, an expose of Joe McCarthy, and that sold about 300,000 copies when the subscription level was at about 40,000. So it just flew off the presses. But we've got name called all the time. I mean, I had a wall here covered with hate mail after, you know, I opposed Bush's Iraq war, and, you know, I talked about the civil liberties threat under Bush-Cheney, and, you know, I said, you know, we're closer to martial law than you think, and then all of a sudden comes out a memo over the last couple of weeks from the Justice Department released from the Bush age where they said they were thinking of using U.S. troops here and suspending the First Amendment. This was Bush's Attorney General's office, and John Yoo, the Deputy Attorney General, who was author of all those torture memos, also wanted to suspend the Constitution. So we were a lot closer than people thought, and this kind of warning was something that wasn't hard for us to issue, though, because we studied the last 100 years, and we know what happens in times of war or war scares or the Cold War, for instance, and assaults on civil liberties flow automatically from that kind of war hysteria.
Excuse me, Matthew Rothschild, for not remembering off the top of my head, but you have like an alert or something, a civil liberties alert, don't you?
Yeah, McCarthyism Watch, which,
oh, yeah.
You know, I had more stories than I could handle over the last 8 years. There's still some, too, that I haven't had time to get to. But, you know, for instance, I just read something about the FBI infiltrating mosques around the country right now. And there's no presumption of innocence anywhere. You can't gather in public or even in a religious setting without, you know, the FBI or other law enforcement, you know, either filming you or taking notes or acting as though they're a member of your group and infiltrating your group just to get information on you. That's not supposed to happen in a democracy.
And I could imagine some people thinking, well, wait a minute, if they're even a potential, I want somebody keeping their eye on them. There's a lot of problems with it, but one of the big problems is historically that infiltrators have also been provocateurs, is that they try to make their job, this infiltration, even more worthwhile by suggesting extreme actions on a part of the people or the group that has been infiltrated, and actually where there was never intent of crime, one is created. And sometimes even if the provocations don't work, the informants just lie about it, right?
Yeah, and they egg them on to do things that they wouldn't otherwise egg on. And the point is there should at least be a bunch of evidence that that particular mosque, for instance, is engaging in planning some illegal activities rather than just this blanket. We're going to go to every Muslim mosque in the country and infiltrate it to see what we can get. That kind of dragnet is just antithetical to our democratic freedoms.
And I'm sure that it sows suspicion among people. I mean, because one of the things in a church or a mosque or whatever, one wants to feel that everyone is there on a good faith basis, and suddenly you have somebody, and then when someone disagrees or someone starts a little discord because they have a disagreement, even a legitimate one, you start thinking, maybe this guy is a government provocateur.
Well, and that's happened in the last couple of years with anti-war groups and anti-death penalty groups. There was one in Baltimore where there were four people at a planning session for a protest against the imminent execution of someone. One of the four people was a undercover Maryland state trooper with a false name. I mean, what kind of freedom to protest and freedom to assemble do we have if the police are infiltrating us all the time?
Well, this, in fact, I would say that throughout American history, the adherence to civil liberties has been pretty limited by the government. I mean, if you don't have anything to say or there's nothing really going on, you can almost say anything. But if you go back through history, it's a pretty rough road that we've had to enforce what the founding fathers codified, is they wanted that as the key element of a citizenry that is involved in the process of decision making and law making. I mean, and that goes back to the Magna Carta almost. And yet we've had to fight, and that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons the Progressive magazine has been so valuable over its 100 years, is it's fought for that.
Yeah, I mean, we had an article in this book, Democracy in Print, the Best of the Progressive Magazine, by Milton Mayer in the 1950s, who was sending around copies of the Declaration of Independence, showing it to strangers, asking if they would sign it. And most of the people wanted to sign it. They thought it was a subversive document. I mean, so people need to understand our freedoms. And you talked about people thinking, oh, this is too ideological for me. But, you know, is your right to free speech something that's too ideological for you? I think we all need to ask ourselves that. Or going back to social justice issues, child labor. Should you be in favor of child labor? I mean, it took decades in the 20th century to outlaw child labor. It took decades to get women's suffrage, even in the 20th century. And I suppose you could call those ideological battles, but those were ideological battles that should have been fought, just as civil rights for African Americans and ending Jim Crow. That's a battle that we should have waged, whether you call it ideological or not. And I don't mean you, Peter. I mean the listener who's afraid of the idea that, oh, they're going to be called progressive by somebody. I mean, it's really not a badge of shame.
Well, I would say, I may be wrong, and a listener can write me, but I would say over the 100 years of the Progressive magazine's publication, that without fail, the critics, often the ones that were suppressed in any number of ways, were almost always right, and the consensus eventually came to that. So I think that, you know, there's such an incredibly proud tradition of your magazine and the contents and the people that were involved. Let me look at my clock here. This is too much fun talking with Matthew Rothschild. Boy, I wish I could get to this conference. I don't think I'll be able to, but let's just run through some of the things that we can expect. We have about a minute and a half left. So there's a big 100 centenary party planned, big celebration in Madison, on May 1st and 2nd. You can go to progressive.org, and all us people listening here in Michigan, we can just trot over there.
Yeah, all you need to do is show up in Madison, Wisconsin, and you're going to have to pay to get in. But if you can just come to one session, you can get in for just $50 to one of these big sessions. I mean, if you just came for Saturday night to see Howard Zinn, Barbara Ehrenreich, the social critic, and Robert Redford, along with comedian Will Durst, who is just a stitch to listen to, you could get into that, and that would be a fun evening. Or if you came right beforehand, you could see the peace activist Cindy Sheehan, or Representative Keith Ellison, the first Muslim elected to the House of Representatives, and Naomi Klein, the great author of these books about globalization. So I invite everyone to come. It's going to be a gathering the likes of which we haven't seen in a long time.
All right. The two other aspects of the celebration we should mention will be the May 1st publication, which will be right there in time for the conference in Madison, Democracy in Print. It's the best of the Progressive magazine, 1909 to 2009. It's edited by my guest, Matthew Rothschild. And all of it, including you can go to progressive.org, but I was stumbling over, and remind me, the magazine is going to be what issue that's going to be?
Yeah, the special issue, or the April issue, is an expanded 100-page issue, a page a year, of the best of the Progressive in bite size.
Oh, that's great. My guest has been Matthew Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive since 1994, and if you go to that site, you can see the information on his weekly public affairs program that's nationally syndicated. Is it streamed? Can we get it on the internet here?
Oh, sure. You can stream it on the internet.
Okay, that's great. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with me and having joined me on the Peter Werby Show. And I guess I'm sorry I'm not going to be in Madison. It sounds great. But congratulations to 100 years old.
Thanks, Peter. It's great to be on the show again.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
King Henry, why are you looking so sad?
My fourth wife is making my life miserable. I was thinking of having her beheaded like I did the others, but these new women's rights groups are giving me a very hard time.
Today, there's a better way to end your marriage. Simply call Adam. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men. Let Adam take the misery out of your divorce while they protect the rights of men.
Your Highness, the Queen requests an audience with you.
Okay, show her in.
Hello, Henry, my dear. I understand you've hired Adam to handle your divorce.
That's right.
Well, why don't you come up to my chamber tonight and perhaps we could bury the hatchet, hmm?
You don't have to lose your home, your children, or your money in a divorce. Call Adam, the American Divorce Association for Men. They answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call 248-356-ADAM.
How's business? Two words that are certain to dampen an otherwise gleeful conversation. Yet, despite the endless reports of gloomy forecasts and impending doom, there is a silver lining. Comerica Bank. We've weathered every financial market since 1849. So why is this important to your business? Simple. We're in a healthy position to help you. So while the economy has closed many doors of opportunity, at Comerica Bank, we're open for business. Yours. With millions to lend for qualified customers, suddenly, how's business has a confident answer. To find out how you can get the capital your business needs to succeed, call a Comerica Bank small business specialist at 1-800-535-2740. Or stop by any Comerica Banking Center. Comerica Bank, member FDIC, an equal opportunity lender.
Finally, an all-natural male enhancement product that really works and works fast. You can be sure that when the moment is right for that most intimate experience, you'll be ready to perform in the bedroom. Hero Tabs has been scientifically developed as a natural proprietary blend of the highest quality ingredients that is safe and effective. Just take Hero Tabs 30 minutes before sexual activity, and you will experience explosive, fast-acting results with just one dose. Hero Tabs works the first time and every time, guaranteed. Hero Tabs will give you the ultimate sexual performance. In fact, we are so sure that you will rise to the occasion that we want you to try a free sample to test it for yourself. With over 3 million doses sold, we know once you try Hero Tabs, you will become one of our satisfied customers.
Test the power of doctor-recommended Hero Tabs absolutely free. Call 1-800-256-1210. That's 1-800-256-1210. Call right now so you don't miss out on your free sample. Call 1-800-256-1210. 1-800-256-1210.
You'll come into the ER, they're scared, they're angry, they're young, they're 47, 52. It's like they're not believing that they're having a heart attack.
Some pretty amazing things are happening at DMC Huron Valley Sinai Hospital.
We can come in and within 10 minutes get them on our table, open the blockage with a stent of lung, and then the comments they're saying afterwards, thank you for saving my life. I can't believe you guys can fix us here.
In this area, only Huron Valley is performing emergency angioplasty on site.
We had a West Bloomfield fireman. He said the patient said, well, maybe we should go to another hospital. And they said, well, no, it looks like you're having a heart attack. I think we need to take you to Huron Valley because they fix people there.
When your family has a medical emergency, from scrapes and breaks to strokes and heart attacks,
they're going to have minimal, if any, heart muscle damage because they were treated so quickly at Huron Valley.
DMC Huron Valley Sinai, 29-minute ER guarantee at Commerce and Commerce in Commerce.
My name is Nancy Brody, and I am the manager of the cath lab at Huron Valley Sinai.
Getting you back to the lot.
I got something that'll make you feel better.
101 WRIF.
over. I see your motives are tied. Decisions to hide.